Talk of Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Connor McKnight, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Welcome in. This is The Beat here on 720 WGN.
Can I ask you a question?
You gotta wait for Bruno to do his thing. Now we can. Okay, see? There's a thing in the open, is what it is. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Mark Carmen. You're sitting around, driving around, whatever you're doing this lovely, warm December weekend and hanging out with us. We appreciate it. We've got the Chicago Sports Conversation up until 7 o'clock this evening here on 720 WGN. Appreciate you joining us. A couple things set for you. It's been a fairly busy week in Chicago sports.
Really, something's going on?
It's been relatively busy, and it's not the denizens of the United Center, the Blackhawks or the Bulls making the most noise, although they're both doing their best to make a little bit of noise.
Gator!
It is, in fact, your Chicago Cubs making tons of noise this baseball offseason. We'll talk plenty about it here in the first hour or so of the show. Jason Hayward, John Lackey, Ben Zobrist, the trade of Starlin Castro. I mean, this is, in a very real way, it's a changing of the guard. It's a new era in Cubs baseball. Even as much as the beginning of last season, the call-up of Chris Bryant, the promotion of Kyle Schwarber, that was a new era. This is too, and they're going to be markedly different.
I'd like to take issue with a couple fine writers in this city who have done work that I would never even dream of doing, but they are writing stuff like the Cubs have given up absolutely nothing and they've added all these players. Mm-hmm. They did give up, and I know they didn't want him, or at least allegedly didn't want him, and I guess by trading him probably shows they really didn't want him in Starlin Castro. But I'm going to miss Starlin. I just want to throw that out there. Before we celebrate Jason Hayward, and who I like, I don't love, I like Jason Hayward.
It's a fair point to make, too.
And John Lackey, I think, was an excellent signing, and I like Ben Zobrist. So that makes sense as far as replacing Starlin, sure. But Starlin was awesome in August and September this year. He really was, and he was solid in the playoffs, too. And I think Starlin's going to go on to have a nice career with the New York Yankees. I think it's well worth celebrating everything that's going on with the Cubs. A guy like Jason Hayward, who they're paying to come here, Connor, in the prime of his career, you're paying for actually what's coming, not for what he's already done, which is extremely rare in free agency.
Incredibly rare.
Yeah, and the fact that you're getting a guy who allegedly took less money. He left the St. Louis Cardinals, the perennial World Series contender St. Louis Cardinals, to come to the Chicago Cubs for less money. That is incredible in itself. It really is. I don't know. Has that ever happened before in any Cub way weirdness? Because I couldn't think of it.
We'll talk about it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I want to get your thoughts on whether this Cubs franchise is going the way you'd like it. And I think there will be, throughout the afternoon, some talk about Starlin Castro, what he was on this team, and because he's a carryover guy, even from when Theo and Jed got here. He was a carryover Jim Hendry, you know, acquisition, free agent. Can I get brought into the organization as a 16-year-old? So that's, you know, he's very much a piece of the past that's now moving on. You can get us on Twitter as well if you're interested in it, at WGN The Beat on Twitter. You can follow us individually as well, at McKnight_WGN, and he is at The Carm, because the man needs an article.
And before we get into the meat of the show, I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
You have a bag of Vintner's potato chips sitting
right
here. Yeah,
I went over to the, I don't understand, you don't like a Vintner's?
No,
I went over to the
no,
Billy Goat for a burger and a chip and a Coke, like I usually do before the Saturday show.
No, it's a great choice, and I respect it, and I think you're doing everything right in your life, with the exception, in your Vintner's potato chip bag,
yeah,
Connor, how many chips do you have left?
I have the remnants of chips, really.
Yeah, you've got
10 or 12. Very small chips, though. You know what I mean? These are the dregs.
Who goes to the bottom of the chip bag and doesn't finish the bag and just leaves it there for that one snack moment during the show?
It was working.
Who has the wherewithal?
It was working. I was going to finish the chip bag, and then John Williams was kind enough to let me talk to him for 5 or 6 minutes, which, and we haven't talked to John in a long, as much as we like Northwestern football, and we love having him here on WGN. I've missed talking with John Williams a little bit. That was nice.
So you were having your Vintners, and then transition happened, which
at a moment with John.
Unfortunately, was reading very intently all the stories of the week, so I was late, which is my fault, and I apologize to John Williams, WGN, you, Mike Jacobson, and anybody else who's listening in upper management.
I think they're all fine.
You just stopped mid.
I did. I stopped mid-ship.
And then didn't go back. I've never seen somebody leave that chip there. I could never do that.
Yeah, well, you didn't want me to. You tried to eat it.
Yes.
You figured it wasn't. You assumed that it wasn't anyone's, so you tried to eat the chips.
I was like, who left these chips after I took your yogurt?
Me, the guy who's sitting right next to you and concurrently working with you.
I've just never seen anybody do that. I'm very proud of you. You got good willpower going on there.
Chip etiquette is what I've got.
Well, something.
Chip etiquette, and I will teach it to you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We have plenty to do this afternoon.
Our guest,
Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune, will join us at just after the 3:30 news. We'll talk some Cubs with him, get the particulars on exactly how things went down here. Now, you mentioned something, Carm. You mentioned that Jason Hayward has reportedly taken less money, I suppose, to come to the Cubs as opposed to going to a place like the Nationals or the Angels were reported, or indeed staying with the Cardinals.
Yeah, to me, the biggest thing is, like, you get to a place, you know, you get into a room, you get your hotel, wherever you get your house, you get your condo. It's pain, man, to move to Chicago. Like, you get comfortable. He's leaving.
Well, he had just been traded to the Cardinals before last season.
Right, right. Only 1 year. I get it.
I think that was kind of a transitional time. Now, from what I've seen and from reports, and we'll clear this up with Gonzo when we talk to him just after the news, but, yeah, he took less overall money, perhaps, but it sounds like the Cubs' average annual value-wise, you know, in that $23 million per year range, you know, over the course of the contract, doesn't sound like anybody was necessarily over that. You know, so he's getting paid more per year, and I find what's really interesting in this contract and in contracts all over baseball, the free agent, you know, contracts all over baseball, are the opt-outs that are being offered to players, that are being player options, and that are being thrown over contracts like Greinke exercised from the Dodgers to become a free agent and then get a buku amount of money with the Diamondbacks, like David Price has too. Players get options, and that's a way for teams to kind of put more money out there on the table for them without having to put their money on the table for them necessarily.
Well, it's incredible that that's what's gone on in baseball now, that you have, we're going to pay you $22-23 million a year for 8 years, right? Do I have the math right? Yes, eight years, right? And by the way, if you're really good the first 3 years,
you'll go get more.
You can just leave us.
Yep.
But by the way, if you suck, we're going to pay you this amount of money for 8 years.
Well, that's what you'd be in anyway with a contract. That's the Alfonso Soriano contract. You know, here's 136, full no trade clause, and this is guaranteed throughout the course of whatever your Cubs career looks like.
Right, but if they were really good and you're betting on him going into his prime, then maybe there will actually be some value in there. But if you're getting some huge value for him, no, see you later, somebody else is going to pay me 30.
It's a way to get creative, and for teams like the Cubs who couldn't necessarily, I don't know, maybe they didn't have the financial flexibility all the way down the line to go 10 years and 200 like some other teams did, maybe that's a way for them to get a little, you know, creative with things. It's a risk, no doubt about it. It's a risk for that club.
Right. And then the other side of it, maybe it works out for the Cubs where, okay, yeah, I'm going to opt out after 3 years, and the Cubs can decide, well, we can pay you market value now, or we can say, you know what, thanks for the 3 years, and we're going to put that 30 whatever million it is then, assuming that the baseball salaries continue to go straight to the moon.
Oh, they will. They will. They're only going up. They're not going down. Haven't ever.
It's so nauseating.
It's what everybody's salary does. Just theirs, it's for playing a kid's game.
I'm making the same amount of money now than when I was 24.
Well, yeah, but this business is a little different than everybody else's. The Army-Navy game's on as well. Navy leads that 14-10. They're in the second quarter. I love the Army-Navy game. As much as I love doing the show with you, I kind of wish I was watching the Army-Navy game.
I feel like Army-Navy is the best rivalry in college football.
Yeah.
Just because it's got so much history and it's so cool, and they both sing each other's songs.
The holding.
The whole deal.
124 years, 128 years, something like that. It's not the longest played college football rivalry, but I think it's like second. And I should tell you this, too. Bears fans, join Chicago Tribune's Sports Plus for a sports-only membership that includes award-winning coverage, great perks, and more at chicagotribune.com/sports.
Take it like a Bears fan.
Cubs have made plenty of moves. We'll talk to Mark Gonzalez after the 3:30 news. White Sox have chipped away and improved the roster some. Scott Merkin joins us at 4:05. We've got the Northwestern Wildcat Insider segment this afternoon, too. We'll talk to Northwestern Athletic Director Dr. Jim Phillips and NU basketball coach Chris Collins this afternoon, too. Plenty to do, and it's all coming up right here, 720 WGN.
You lose a wonderful player. Starlin, I love Starlin Castro. I think he's outstanding. I think he's going to be very productive in the American League with the Yankees.
Checks all the boxes for us. He's, you know, a right-handed bat that has history of success against left-handed pitching. Very athletic, age appropriate, and you know, so it gives us an upgrade, we feel, at second base. Protection, you know, behind Didi and Headley at short and third.
You're gonna miss that. I am
gonna miss that. There's nothing I can say that's gonna make me or you or really anybody feel better about missing the extravaganza that was Starlin Castro's at-bat music. I don't know. Where did you find this, Mike Jacobson, our producer on the other side of the glass, who puts everything together for us here on the show? You're listening to The Beat, by the way, 720 WGN. That was Starlin Castro's at-bat music that he was rolling with all through the... I don't think that was all year long, but it came about like halfway through the season, something like that?
I think it was about halfway through the season.
Before he got himself benched.
It was. It was before the benching, and then it just took a life of its own.
It just created its own little thing. What band is this?
I could not tell you.
Starlin Castro at-bat music.
Exactly.
All right, reuse the power of Google so that we can find out.
I will look that up in 2 seconds.
Because proper credit needs to be given. So Starlin Castro was on his way out, and as I don't know, rose colored as the glasses can be, looking at Jason Hayward and Ben Zobrist and John Lackey and whatever else happens with this Cubs roster as the offseason continues, as rose colored as those glasses can be, why not a little bit of a salute to Starlin Castro on the way out the door? And let's, you know, talk about the player that he was and the player that he wasn't at the same time too. Because, you know, for a couple of years here, it was the ups and the downs. You had peaks and valleys. I mean, despite the fact that the guy's 25 years old, has 991 career hits, and is on pace to have 3,000 hits in the major leagues.
Is that good?
By the time he's 37? Yeah, that's pretty good. And I did the math, Carmen. You know the rules about me doing math here on the show. You're not allowed to necessarily trust this, so check it out at home. But I'm pretty sure I got this one right. If he goes for 165 hits each year for the next 12 seasons, in that 13th season, that season where he's turning 38 in season,
yeah,
3,000th hit. I mean, it was fun, and the guy was a fun player too. And I don't mean that in like the classic sense of like, oh my God, just everything he does is wonderful. The ups and the downs were there, and in a very real way, you know, that so much of the future of this franchise, maybe for far too long and maybe misguidedly, was pinned on Starlin Castro.
Right, it was him and Rizzo, and these were the two
guys.
But
even before Rizzo, I mean, I'm talking 2010, 2011.
No, that's true, he was here first. And listen, Starlin, a lot of Cub fans, as we're seeing some of the texts come in, and you can call us too, 312-981-7200. Maybe you won't miss him, and judging by the text, he was horrible for most of it, but he was good occasionally. Listen, the guy is a three-time All-Star, all right? That says something.
And always a tantalizing talent that you thought might just flip the switch and be transcendent.
Right, and
if not transcendent, then great, you know?
And they finally figured it out at the very end. He's not a shortstop. He is a second baseman. And I get it, they didn't have a lot of options there. But even at the beginning of this year, and I think Madden was being a little deferential to him, first-year manager, and Starlin's played there, and you didn't quite know what Addison Russell was. But I'm sure he knew in his heart, after watching spring training, that Addison Russell is a better shortstop than Starlin. But for whatever reason, he waited until benching him and then bringing him back to put him at second base. The guy, he's going to be way more effective as a second baseman. He's not a shortstop. And I mean, I can play there in a pinch, sure, but he's just not. He doesn't field the ball quick enough, and he bobbles too many balls. He belongs at second base.
And as much better he played, that's not a real sentence, as well as he played at second base, even in those last 2 months of the season.
It was a little dicey.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't perfect.
No, he had plenty of bobbles.
He had some. Yeah, I like the way he turns the double play at second base. I think he receives that throw from shortstop well, and he's able to make that throw across the diamond from second to first, finishing that double play from any angle, which makes him pretty versatile there. Still, I don't know that I trust the everyday. You know, I don't know that I trust the everyday fielding necessity that you're looking for in a second baseman or a shortstop in Starlin Castro. I think he does have a decent career in New York. I still think, though, that that's the player, as much as you wanted as a Cubs fan, if you were watching this team over the last 5 years as a Cubs fan and you wanted him to be the future of the franchise, or you wanted him to be that six hitter on a Cubs World Series team, I think now we know you were never really going to get that guy on a consistent basis the plate.
Look out the window. I don't want to interrupt the show, but that's your baseball partner from back in the day, Todd Hollinsworth, walking by.
I love that guy.
On the phone, and just looks fantastic.
He's probably talking with Yankees front office. He's probably getting things set, you know, for future reference, you know, that kind of thing. Todd Hollinsworth. Todd Hollinsworth has never had a bad hair day in his life. Did you know that about Todd Hollinsworth?
Oh, I absolutely.
Never had a bad hair day.
No, he's got a nice, solid flip. 312-981-7200. I think at least one person wants to give Starlin some love, or probably hate.
We'll find out. In Waukegan, it's Tom. What's up, Tom?
Yes.
Yes.
What's Tom on your mind?
Yes, Starlin Castro. I was watching a game last year against the Reds, and he hit a line drive. He paused to look at it, to admire it, kind of like Sammy Sosa, and the ball wound up hitting the outfield wall.
Uh-huh.
It should have easily been a double.
Sure.
A modicum of hustle, he would have been in second base, but he dogged it, and he wound up on first base. I mean, he's got all the talent in the world, but his head was never in the game. And I think that it's little things, you know, little nuanced things like keeping track of the base running situation and the defense. And I remember Bobby Valentine on national TV lambasted him, and he's right. His head's not in the game. I think he's kind of flaky. He's got all the talent in the world, but I don't think he's a true winner. And maybe that could be proved wrong, but I'm glad to see him go.
Wow. Tom, appreciate the phone call, man. I think that's a little harsh. I don't know that you can say his head's just not flaky, yes. But flaky is different than never focused. Because a guy who racked up 207 hits in 2011, or a guy who led the league in hitting for the last 2 months of the season last year, you can't say that his head's not in the game. Did it leave? Yeah, every once in a while. I think that Bobby Valentine issue that Tom brought up there is a valid one to bring up. I think that turned a lot of people against Starlin Castro irreparably. It was done. It was absolutely... And Bobby's not wrong in pointing out what he pointed out that moment.
He did it a bunch of times.
You're right.
There was the Bobby Valentine moment. There was a ground ball in Cincinnati, I think, this year where... Or maybe it was Washington where he boots it, puts his head down, another run scores. Kyle Hendricks is screaming at him, Starlin, Starlin. Then he puts his head down like, my God.
It was a double in the playoffs over Juan Lagares' head in Citi Field. He probably should have been on third base.
That's true, too. All those were the negatives of Starlin.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I don't know if it's ADD, which gets people classify things as ADD probably more so than it actually is that. But there was something going on there with Starlin and the attention. But that I'm not going to say that made him a losing player.
No. Losing players don't take a demotion, live with it, be a good teammate, and then come back and win a job back at second base wherever you can. I mean, that's not a loser. That's just not a loser.
No, and also, by the way, play his best baseball for you down the stretch when you are pushing for the playoffs, and every single one of those games mattered.
Flaky, yes. Loser, I don't know that you can go that far. Mark Gonzalez is going to join us just after the 3:30 news. We'll step aside real quick, and Veronica will have it for you in just a minute, 720 WGN.
You approach the offseason in two ways. One is looking for areas to get better, looking for areas of obvious improvement, And we have some of those, and I can get into those. And then the second is just trying to anticipate everything that could go wrong that will get in the way of you being really good again the next year, or even better the next year.
That's Cubs executive Theo Epstein in his end-of-the-year press conference. I was there for that. I remember that little part of it. Thinking no one can possibly think of all the little contingencies. Put enough heads together, maybe you can.
Just build the statue right now. Let's stop waiting for him to actually win World Series. Be ahead of the curve, a la Theo. They should build the statue right now.
Talk a little Cubs with the man who's close to the team. He covers them for the Chicago Tribune, Mark Gonzalez, who we call Deluxe here on the beat, 720 WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Nice to have you. I have been, you know, talking with people that I know, Cubs fans, who had checked out of this team for a little bit, and come back, you know, whenever they came back over the course of last season, as a lot of Cubs fans did. And they're, a lot of them, I find, worried about the money. Worried about, oh my God, how do you pay for all this? And well, if you put all this money out here, what if they're all bad? How How does this money work out in the short and the long term, all to Lackey, all to Zobrist, all to Hayward? And how did the Cubs get to a point where they're comfortable handing out about $257 million if everything goes the way it's reasonably structured?
Well, if they're worried, they can be assured that there's 29 other teams that have fans that might be worried too, because baseball's flush with money. In the case of the Cubs, there are a lot of financial gymnastics performed, but that's not saying the money isn't there, because it is. What they did is get creative in terms of earmarking money towards certain years and putting more up in middle years, then backing off at the end. It gives them a lot of flexibility. Keep in mind that there's this a lucrative local TV deal that seems to be imminent. When I say imminent, probably kick in about 2020, but certainly you look at what the team did, how much money they made with the playoff run, two layers of playoffs, renovations at Wrigley Field that are going to amount to a lot of retail and sales. I'm sure they did very, very well in this final quarter of 2015 in terms of merchandise and sales. Everything's pointing up.
So fair to say, Gonzo, that if they had not gotten into the playoffs this year and gotten that extra revenue, that Jason Hayward would not be here right now?
They would have felt it in some way. I don't know if it would have been him that would have been the odd man out, or the guy they wouldn't have pursued, or it would have been not been able to extend Zobrist to 4 years. It would have been felt some way, but I think it certainly helped that playoff run and having that subsequent revenue that really helped them get some deals done.
Fewer onions at all the concession stands. I think that's how we're all going to feel that, or how we would have felt it, and then I made the playoffs.
I like those onions.
I put them on everything. Gonzo, I wonder, with Jason Hayward, 8 years, 184. He is that rare free agent that comes, position player who comes available at age 26. There are some valid questions about what kind of player he is. Hasn't hit more than 15 home runs in the last two seasons. The on base is high. The ground ball rate was up. The strikeouts are low. He's a great fielder, but pretty much just in right and okay in center. Is this an overpay on a guy you're hoping for the future, you know, comes around in the next 3 years in his prime? Or is this, you know, them finding something that's a little undervalued in the market?
I think there are a lot of components. This signing points to the new trend in baseball. When I say new trend, it's you know, emphasis on base percentage, defensive runs saved. I believe he has saved 122 runs on defense since 2010. I think it's the most among outfielders. The fact he gets on base, I alluded to that earlier. The fact that he's only 26, that he should be reaching his prime. I think one thing to keep in mind is that for five of those 6 years, he hit in half his games in one of the biggest ballparks in the majors, one that's not power-friendly in Turner Field or Braves Field, whatever they call it now. So keep that in mind. I think he was a very unselfish, adjustable hitter. When I say adjustable, he batted leadoff some of the time and did quite well during that period. So how it all translates, I can only say that he's a .311 lifetime hitter at Wrigley Field. He's a gap hitter as well, so I think that should bode well for him once it starts warming up around here. You might say the price is a tick or two high, but keep in mind that he turned down less dollars to come here, so he's all in.
So when you hear that, Gonzo, that here's a guy who was on the St. Louis Cardinals, a perennial World Series contender, and he says, you know what, I'm going to take less money to go to the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you've been covering this team for a long time now. That would not have been the case a couple of years ago. It's a pretty huge stamp of approval for the organization, right, is where they're at and from where they've come from.
I think this is the one that really spells it out. Now, he does have two opt-out years, but having made that commitment and taken fewer guaranteed dollars tells me that he definitely buys in the plan. I think this is a major step in terms of their selling points concerned as to what they believe in and how they see things crystallizing in the future.
Do they, you know, with the way this lineup's constructed, you mentioned Hayward batting leadoff and being, you know, less than selfish, I guess, in order to be there. Maybe that's not his prototypical spot or archetypical spot. How do you think they go ahead constructing this lineup? I mean, everybody wants that pure leadoff man. Dexter Fowler wasn't a pure leadoff man, just maybe one of the better ones they've had in a long time. Is there an emphasis on that for you? Is it a problem there in the lineup for you?
Well, as you see the game evolve, you find out there's fewer and fewer true leadoff hitters in this game. Yeah. They're either born or you acquire them. They just don't evolve over time. I'm sure Zobrist, the fast at bat leadoff, could do an adequate job, but he wouldn't be your prototypical leadoff guy. Same for Hayward, but they find ways to get on base, work deep counts. So even if they're not getting on base, they're jacking up pitch counts so the next guy has a good look and has a greater chance of success. So I don't have a true issue with it like I might have in the past. It's just the way the game has changed.
Mark Gonzalez, read him in the Tribune. Follow him on Twitter at MD Gonzalez. Your life will be better. Gonzo, I heard that Joe Maddon behind the scenes has been enormous as far as calling potential players the Jason Haywards of the world and recruiting them, saying things like, hey, you come to Chicago and we win it, you'll never pay for a meal in this town. That type of stuff. Have you heard that? It seems like something he would do to me.
Oh, he's a convincing guy, but he's not a guy that's going to pound his fist and say, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. He has a very unique way of conveying his message, and it's effective. You know, he didn't have to do much selling as far as from an emotional standpoint with Zobrist. It's just spelling out just what the kids have done. This is where I see you playing. It wasn't like he was saying, you come here, we're going to win 10 World Series. He didn't have to do it. He says where he fits and who's going to hit behind him. There was substance to what he said, and I think that goes a long way because these guys have been around long enough to know when a guy is lathering them up too much instead of giving them the facts, kind of the Lasorda-isms type stuff.
I got a three-parter for you, then I'm going to let Connor talk for the rest of this interview. Adam Warren, do you think he's in the rotation? Do you think any more moves are coming? Let's just leave it at that. I forgot the third one. Those two will suffice, Mark.
Oh, we have the same problem carrying out a thought. But
it's not good for working in radio. But
I can tell you that. I talked to American League Scout I respect very highly, and he said they really liked Warren, that they felt that had he been in the rotation longer, his ERA would have gone down. They like his stuff. They kind of talked down the idea that he's more solvable the second and third time around, that he'd have a chance to incorporate more of his other pitches, that he'd have a higher rate of success being in the rotation longer. I don't think they're done. And I know that after the Hayward signing that a few teams were inquiring about the right fielder, Jorge Soler. So that doesn't mean the Cubs are going to trade him immediately. But now that the market has dwindled so much, a lot in the last 2 weeks, you're going to find some teams really moving even more quicker to address needs. And we all know, you know, the Braves could use an outfielder with Swisher and Bourne out there
now. Yeah.
You know, the Rays have a surplus of pitching right now. The Indians could use an outfielder as well. So these are interesting times now. And, you know, the Cubs have a surplus. So it'd behoove them to listen, and I am pretty sure they are.
So, Gonzo, as we let you go here, what gear are the Cubs in? If they were in, you know, fifth at the winter meetings, you know, pressing in on Zobrist and Lackey and Hayward, you know, you mentioned that Jorge Soler is probably going to get some phone calls concerning him. Are they, you know, listening, shopping? What tier of starter, if it is indeed a starter that you think, you know, the conversations around Soler are kind of centering, what tier are you looking at? Is that a Shelby Miller type thing who went to the Diamondbacks, or is it a Tyson Ross type deal or an Andrew Cashner type set?
It's definitely a guy that's controllable for under team control for the next 2 to 3 years, and that's what they need right now. I mean, you look at the rotation, the way it's constructed, and you have a lot of seasoned veterans, but at some point you got to get younger. And,
yeah.
and you know, Lackey's going to be up in a few years. Arrieta, you don't know what's going to happen after 2017. And I think this is the one thing that Theo and Jed have addressed, that rainy day scenario. What do you do? How do you protect yourself?
Gonzo, really appreciate it, my man. We'll talk to you as the offseason goes on.
Gonzo, are you going to miss Starlin?
Yeah, I will. Yeah. He was always in front of his locker, whether he had a bad day or a good day. He was a stand-up guy.
The dude liked being here, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did. It's a tough day, but, you know, everybody has an expiration date.
Not you, pal. You're going forever.
Yeah, we all do.
Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks a ton, Gonzo.
Take care, guys.
Absolutely. The dude knows what he's talking about. And, with Starlin Castro, he's right. I mean, he was always there.
Always.
Well, he was always there.
And there were a lot of days that you did not want to be there.
You were Starlin, yeah. The days that you'd prefer to not have been there at the locker, standing there.
Like, for a while, there were most days.
We'll take a couple phone calls on the other side of a quick break here. Bonnie and Evanston, you'll be first up. The Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients. As a full-service clinic, the Eye Institute provides comprehensive eye exams, glasses and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and emergency eye care.
Oh.
All at an affordable price, Carm. Learn more at MWUclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. Welcome back to the beat here, 720 WGN. This is Ando and La Versace by Omega. It was the at-bat music of one Starlin Castro for the last half of the season this past year. I wonder if he takes that to New York with him. I wonder if he plays that at Yankee Stadium.
That probably is just really Wrigley-specific, but it does tell you one more Starlin little nice thing for him, a little bouquet of roses, if you will. If his teammates didn't like him, they never would have done something like that. That shows how he was respected in that clubhouse, right? Yeah. You don't clap and create a song and go nuts for a guy who you think is a pain in the ass. You just don't.
It's true.
So they liked
him. Yasiel Puig's not getting that done for him in L.A.
No.
That's not happening.
No. They appreciated Starlin as a teammate.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Bonnie in Evanston. Hey, Bonnie.
Hey, I like that. I'm going to download that for my phone. I like that song.
Ando and La Versace by Omega. Yeah, it's a good one. I think that's a 99 center, too.
I was the opposite. I did not like him coming up. I thought, his rookie year, and everyone said he's a baby-faced guy. Give him a second year. And then the guy can hit. It wasn't pretty, but he swung, and he got on base for balls that nobody else would have gone for, and he got on. So I think he has a second chance going to New York. My husband's a Sox fan. I'm a Cubs fan. When Starlo came up, my husband would look the other way. He would get out of the room. He hated him. And I said, he's not pretty and he doesn't do it right. But he got on a lot. He swung at things. He shouldn't have swung at and he got on.
How does that, you know what?
Bonnie, he did screw up at shortstop. But they magnified it 100 times over because he was, he's a veteran at 25 on the team. And he did pretty well.
Bonnie, you got great energy. I just want to know how it goes in your family with you and your husband when you on opposite sides of the baseball aisle. That's got to be a challenge.
This year he came around, and plus we just had a baby, and I said she has to be a Cubs fan, so that's it. It's that he's come around because we went to Sox games and it was disgusting. It was so sad. So next year for sure, and watch Castro, watch him blow up when he goes to New York. Remember Soriano did?
Yeah, I mean, he was a big focal point of that offense for a hot month and a half when he went to the Yankees. Bonnie, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Bonnie and Emerson. Here's the Starlin had that bat-to-ball contact kind of skill that you just don't see at that level. Not quite like that. And I think he benefited from it at times, and I think he got struck with bad luck by it sometimes. There are some pitches you're just not supposed to hit because you can't hit them anywhere but bad spots. And for a long time in the beginning of this season, his ground ball rate was almost three times what it had ever been in his career prior. And you can't get on base all that often with a bunch of ground balls. It was a huge problem for him. It was a huge thing that changed in the last 2 months of the year.
Right, running on first and third, Starlin's coming to the plate. I'm almost rooting for a strikeout when he's going bad because otherwise it's going to be a double play ball.
Right, and he doesn't strike out all that much either.
Right.
Because of the bat-to-ball contact,
But he's got it. Listen, the ceiling for him I don't think is super high. He's not going to turn into some 25 home run guy. I wouldn't think that. I mean, when he hits a home run, he's swinging hard. I mean, it's all in, and that swing doesn't look the same. But could he be a guy that hits 300 with you know, an on base around 330.
That's the guy you need.
I mean, that's
what Starlin Castro, right. A 300 batting average, a 330 on base, maybe a little bit higher than 300, and that's the skill set you're paying for.
Right, right. So anyway, bottom line, we wish Starlin well. I have no animosity whatsoever towards Starlin.
Sure, a little regret. I think you can have a little regret.
Sure.
I think Starlin probably has a little in that he didn't, you know, that he lost a job. I think first and foremost, he probably regrets that. I think he's talked about that some, but it's always. Given where he was, I think he's going to be such an interesting, you know, remember when kind of thing. When you do the 30 for 30 on a Cubs team that eventually wins, you know, this kind of Cubs iteration that eventually wins, there needs to be a minute or two on Starlin Castro.
Sure.
And what the team was and how focused everyone was on Starlin, because the rest of that club was god-awful.
Well, and moving forward, I think the other thing is, look, Ben Zobrist has been a very good player, and they're very high on him, and they paid him handsomely to come mm-hmm. over here. He's 35 years old come May.
You're right.
All right, so, I mean, it's 39 at the end of that contract. For a middle infielder, and I know he plays all over the place, but basically for a guy you're bringing in to play second base, that's old. That's legit old to play that position. So we'll see.
It's very much a win-now kind of offseason, which is not like one you've seen since Jim Hendry was handing out no-trade contracts. The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNRadio.com. This year, Chicago's captured in black and white. It's presented in a special and one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2Ks calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and this is the first year it's all in black and white. So not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of our spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. They were nice enough to drop one off for me. It looks awesome. It really does. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars at a whole new level of class and elegance. You give a gift that's completely 100% original. Go to WGNRadio.com, scroll down to the feature section, and make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2Ks calendar, available in the feature section at WGNRadio.com.
Scott Merkin, MLB.com, your voice of the White Sox, if you will, is coming up right after the 4 o'clock news, 720 WGN.
Don't throw behind someone and then walk away when you throw 100 miles an hour and say, the next time that I face you, I'm going to hit you in the head. That's when you go like this and you're walking away and you go like this, next time I face you in the head, that's some bull and he needs to pay for that. That ain't okay. This is a game. This isn't going up there trying to hurt people. This guy doesn't throw 85 miles an hour. He throws 100.
That's the new flavor on the south side of town. Brett Laurie is going to be your third baseman for the White Sox. And as crazy, I shouldn't say crazy, as intense as Brett Laurie has been over the course of his baseball career, he's 1,000% right about what he's talking about there. That was one of his dust-ups with the Royals, I recall. Is that right? Yeah, okay, that's one of his dust-ups with the Royals.
Kelvin Herrera,
that's right, Kelvin. Who are you, Kelvin Herrera?
He may play third. Right now he's playing third, but you never know with a Brett Lowry. Could end up at that second base spot, depending on what those Rickon White Sox do.
He's an athletic dude. Let's ask him about it. Let's ask Scott Merkin about it. Scott, you certainly know something about being athletic out there at third base yourself. I know that about you. Don't play me like you don't. Nice to have you, man.
I've had people throw at me before, but it had nothing to do with baseball or anything like that. So, but yeah, my third base days ended when my softball career came to an end, I think.
Scott Merkin of MLB.com. So where does Brett Lowry fit in things? How did this deal come together, and why is a guy who's had some success in the past and had a better, you know, first 40 games in the majors than Mike Trout in 2011 all at the same time, how does he eventually end up on the south side of town?
Well, I think answer your first question. As Rick had said a few times in the winter meetings, as of December 12th, he is the team's third baseman. Mm-hmm. Now, who knows if February 12th or even January 12th, that's going to be the same situation. One of the key things I think you're seeing in the open market now and for teams is they pay for versatility. Now, granted, they're not, you know, they're going to pay arbitration for Brett Lowry, but they acquired versatility. He can play third. But if they go out and happen to swing a deal for, I'll just throw a name, you know, Todd Frazier out there, who I know they have interest in, then he can go play second base, too. And he can still play third during the course of the year. You know, the trade was, I mean, they needed, I don't want to say an upgrade because it just kind of is a slap at the guys who were doing it. But, you know, Mike Holt, as a try, kind of sort of an on-field tryout in September, and didn't give them what they exactly wanted. And Matt Davidson, you know, as hard as he's worked, has just not produced at Charlotte. So they needed an upgrade at third base, and Lowry was one of, I was told, four candidates they were looking at. They looked at Lowry, they looked at Todd Frazier, they looked at his Drupal Cabrera, and the famous, at this time of year, the mystery candidate. And it ended up being Brett Lowry. You know, Cabrera signed almost immediately after the Lowry trade with the Mets, and I think Todd Frazier is still in play there. So, you know, they gave up two prospects. Now, again, not if you go by MLB.com's rankings, not in the top 30, either one of them, but I talked to Nick Hostetler, who's in charge of the amateur scouting, running draft this year. He saw Zach Irwin quite a bit last year, and, you know, some of the A's got a guy who could be a major league starter at some point. It's just kind of strange with the new rule, you know, that they got a guy who was the fourth round last year, didn't have a year to, you know, work in the system, and now he's part of the A's. So, to make a long story short, right now he's a third baseman. They like his upside. They like his versatility. They like his cost control for 2 years. They like that edge that he has that you just heard on that clip, which, again, I agree with you, 100% right. Don't throw people's heads whether you throw 80 miles an hour or 101 miles an hour. And it, from there, they see where they can add on and see where he ends up.
See, it's interesting because you're talking about not in the top 30, but you're talking about, in Lowry, a guy moving into his prime. He had a career high in homers last year, 16, 60 RBIs, almost 30 doubles. I mean, that's a good season. So the A's must really, and it's, you know, Billy Bean always has different ways of evaluating things, but they must either really like, I'm guessing, Zach Irwin, considering what, as you mentioned, Hostetler was saying, or I guess Jamie Wendelken, who they got. But this is not, you can't look at like the Sox gave up nothing to get Lowry, correct?
Right. Well, I mean, give Rick Hahn credit for the trades he's made early on. I mean, you know, Wendelken was part of the Jake Peavy trade, which actually was a trade that ended up working well for all sides, even with Iglesias' sort of issues last year in Detroit. But, you know, Montas has already pitched in the majors. Jake Garcia starts in right field as of right now for the White Sox. The Cleolis Rondon they have is considered the best defensive shortstop in the organization. He just has trouble, you know, kind of making contact. He's not a great hitter right now. And Wendelken, I think people projected, you know, at his height, probably would be a kind of middle reliever type. So, yeah, I kind of overstated it at first. I said this is a great deal for the Sox, and it was a little bit of hyperbole there. But they didn't give up, you know, even, you know, kind of their rising pitching guys, Tyler Danish, Spencer Adams. They gave up guys who, you know, those in the know, like, as Nick said in the story I wrote yesterday, those who scouted him, those in the amateur scouting industry know how good Irwin is. But, again, by other people not perceived as top 30, so they still have their main guys in place if they're going to go for even a bigger, you know, project next in terms of the trade.
Talking with Scott Merkin, MLB.com. He covers the White Sox. Let's talk about the catching situation that changed, I think, kind of quickly and without some people knowing it. Some people, you know, maybe like Chris Sale, who was upset, I think, to see Tyler Flowers go. Alex Avila is a decent defensive catcher. Deanna Navarro is a decent defensive catcher. I don't know that either of them can be necessarily counted on all that much with the bat, some pop to be sure, but, you know, where are we at behind the plate here in the White Sox organization?
Well, I will say in the sale part, you know, I talked to him the day after Flowers was non-tendered, and I really do believe, just from talking, that he thought Tyler was coming back, but again, you know, Chris is a vital, vital point of that organization, and he's the face of the franchise really right now. But again, he's not, and he, you know, knows this, he's not the general manager or the owner or the manager. And he even said in that interview I did with him the Thursday after that, you know, they don't owe him any sort of call. He said it might have been a little easier if they did, but they don't owe him anything on that. I was one who kind of liked, you know, watching Tyler play. I thought he was a good pitch framer. Now, again, the biggest problem with Tyler is that he didn't hit, and he didn't hit in the lineup that didn't hit. You know, if he was the catcher of the Toronto Blue Jays last year, he would have been a perfect fit, but he wasn't. He was a catcher on a team that didn't hit for power, that didn't hit, period, and they had to make a change. You know, in talking to Detroit people that I saw at the winter meeting, Avila went healthy, getting really high marks, you know, just as very underrated pitch framer. He's kind of changed the way he's caught back there so he doesn't get hit as much. I think everyone remembers, I've mentioned this probably 15 times now, about in 11, when A.J. hit a foul ball, A.J. just get a foul ball off his catcher's mask, and sparks actually flew.
Oh, that's right.
And he stayed in the game. I mean, I don't know if I would have stayed in the city after that happened, let alone stayed in the game. And he caught two more innings. That says a little bit about the guy's fortitude. And he's supposed to be like that. You know, both Navarro and Avila, good presence in the clubhouse. And they can hit. They're better hitters. They have better numbers, at least, than what Tyler had. And Tyler landed on his feet, too, in Atlanta, you know, back in his home state there. So it works out for everyone. And, you know, Chris is on fine. Chris is excited to form a new relationship with the new guys, and he's a pretty easy guy. He reminds me of as I've said before, Mark Burley with way better stuff. You know, just a very easy guy to catch because he just kind of says, call the game, and I'll throw it where you want it. And he's one of the few pitchers who can actually say that and then execute it after the fact. So, yeah, it's a one-year thing, and, you know, it makes you think, what are they going to go after this? Will they give one of these guys a chance to show they belong more than 1 year? Will they go after Weeders, who took the qualifying offer for Baltimore, or maybe try and acquire a younger guy? You know, they don't really have anything in their system that's near. So it was a good combo move, not very expensive, to add a little bit to the offense.
Yeah, see, I'm almost like Chris Sale should be thrilled. Avila is a silver slugger. He's a catcher on a four-time division champion. He's going to – I think he's got some leadership, Scott, that I think the White Sox could use. He's going to be pretty vocal in that clubhouse. Lowry, the same thing. So I don't know if they were looking for guys like that to sort of transform that clubhouse to be a little bit more, I don't know, on edge. Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, Mark, just because, you know, when teams win – the clubhouse is great, you know? And when teams, and let's face it, last year was a really bad year for the White Sox. I'm not, you know, I'm not hiding anything here. You know, I've covered the team for 14 years, and that was probably the worst team I covered when you factor everything into consideration. When you great moves Rick made, when you factor the hope going into the season. Now, granted, me included, probably exaggerated that a little bit. You know, they were a 73-win team the year before, and I think the biggest change you see in those teams that go from like 73 to 93 are teams like the Cubs and Astros who have young guys that are super talented that it just clicks all of a sudden like they picked both teams did last year. It's hard to jump from 73 to 89 or 85 or whatever. So I think, you know, because of that, because of the high hopes, as they always say, the thin line between love and hate, the high hopes quickly turn to extreme venom, you know, throughout the Sox fan base. Understandably so, it was a tough team to watch. They didn't play good defense. They didn't hit the ball. And if you weren't watching Chris Sale or Quintana or Rodon as the year went on, there wasn't much to see there. But I think, you know, they're taking a step in the right direction. They really are. And I can't forget, you know, Jose Abreu had another great year, and Adam Eaton had a great finish. So I'm just saying, as a team, it's hard to pick out individual guys. It just was not a good team. And, you know, at least the teams like that were 63 and 99 or the team in 07 that was 72 and 90, you kind of knew right from the get-go this was not going to be a good team. It was pretty quick on that you knew this was going to be a contention. And last year, and then, you know, they kind of had that seven-game winning streak where they kind of hung around the second wild card. Just a strange season. But I don't know so much about – people I talk to say it was a good clubhouse, but I think they like the guys, for lack of a better word, with the edge, you know, like Avila has, like Lowry has. And they I don't know if they went out to get those guys as much as it was a nice bonus to have when they fit in what they were doing.
Sox fans always freaking out about the plan, Scott. For me, like – just value-wise, you've got a great rotation. Why not just build the team around pitching and defense? There's some talk about putting Trace Thompson in center field, maybe moving Adam Eaton. If you were going to do that, that would make sense to me because you could, in theory, have an elite defender in center, which makes you strong up the middle of the whole deal.
Well, I'm not one of these guys who thinks, you know, I've heard from different people that you should trade Sale and because you're not going to win for 3 years. Number one, I don't think there's anything that says the Sox can't win for sure in 2 years, and if not this year. You know, I mean, this is a team that won 76 games last year and had some really bad, subpar, below career level years from some of their players. I mean, just think of, you know, not even LaRoche has an all-star year. He has a good year. If Cabrera is good from start to finish, if Eaton takes away that, you know, 6 weeks where he wasn't very good, now I'm not saying they're going to go jump up and, you know, I'm not going to predict right now they're going to jump up and beat the Royals out of the division, but I don't think there's anything that you look at this team with Sale, Quintana, Rodon. You have a closer in Roberts who's very good. You have an elite leadoff man in Eaton. You have an elite middle-of-the-order guy in a break. You have good players around them. You're starting to fill in some of the gaps that you had. There's nothing to say that says that they can't be competitive. I don't look at this team and say, full rebuild, let's do it. You know, even if they don't, even if they make, you know, smaller signings along the way. You know, it's the same thing with, like, Hayward on the Cubs. I've seen people compare his numbers to other players. But from what I can tell, they didn't get Hayward to come in and hit 45 home runs and drive in 130. They got him because he's part of the fit. He's part of a winning fit, like Lester last year. Lester didn't win 20 games, but he was part of the fit on that team. And that's what the Sox are building, too, I think, is they're trying to find the right fit for this team moving forward. And I for one, would not, and I haven't heard a rumor to the, you know, the contrary, but I would keep Sale and Quintana unless their return was just overwhelming.
Yeah, I see where you're going there. I wouldn't mind shaking things up for sake of doing it. I think this is...
It's
time to get that kind of return, but it's... Merck, you're right, and Rick Hahn's right, too. That's a hell of a nice cushion to land on at the end of the day, that rotation. It just is.
But you make a good point, though, Connor, because you can't, on the converse, and I'm going to argue against myself now if we have time here. You know, in the converse side, you can't be in the middle the whole time. You can't
right.
be the team that's 78 to 84 wins, and if things go exactly right or line up exactly right, you can sneak into that second wild card. At some point, you got to either go for it or knock it down and rebuild a little bit. But you have too many good pieces, I think, to go through a total rebuild. You know, it doesn't make sense to add Robertson and Cabrera and LaRoche and then trade for Samardzija last year if you were going to go full rebuild. You should have stayed along that path that you were, you know, that you were kind of going. So I think this team is better than people think. I think you had a lot of guys who had bad years. And again, I'm not predicting they're coming back and all going to have all-star years. But if they come back to, you know, sea level, the level ground, it should be a better team just for that.
I think the White Sox would be a really interesting team to watch over the next 2-3 weeks or so, because there's
sure.
probably a little bit more coming. And then I think, Mark, honestly, that first-round pick, the kid out of Vanderbilt, Carson Fulmer, if he mirrors Carlos Rodon's ascendancy into the majors, and I'm not even, you know, he doesn't have to be as good as Rodon was toward the end of the year, just get there and be there. Now you start dealing with just this embarrassment of riches, you know? I mean, then now you start dealing with, you know, Don Cooper is going to bed every night as happy as anybody could possibly be with all those arms. And now we start talking about getting real creative and doing what we're talking about here, moving some things along without having to do a total rebuild, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you got to be careful on Fulmer because Rodon is kind of the exception to the rule. I mean, Fulmer may not be up at all in 16, or he may be up in August or after the trade deadline. I think it all depends on what the team is doing. But we had a chance to talk to his coach, Coach Corbin, who was there, you know, and from Vanderbilt and Nashville, and just raved about the kid, raved about how, you know, just special his composition is and just his competitive nature is. And he's a pretty darn good pitcher on top of it. So, you know, for a guy like David Price, who, by all accounts, while being one of the better pitchers in the game, is one of the better people in the game, take him under his wing. That says something about Carson Fulmer, too, I think. You know,
yeah.
besides the Vanderbilt connection, that says about that this is a quality kid. And, yeah, and, you know, again, there you weigh the situation. Let's say you get a, you know, Todd Frazier offer. Do you say, well, Carson Fulmer's a special kid, but, geez, we got a chance to get Frazier for 2 years and maybe more. Maybe we have to give him up to get that. You know, it's the kind of thing you weigh as you move on.
Merck, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, guys, anytime.
Absolutely. Scott Merkin, MLB.com, covers the White Sox.
Did you say 13
and does
years?
It well.
16 years? How many years has he been covering the Sox?
14. I think he said 14 years.
Whatever it was in the teens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Long time.
God bless.
He's been doing a good job. It's a battle under the boards on WGN-TV. Pau and the Bulls go up against Anthony Davis and the Pelicans. My God, that is a battle under the boards. It's tonight at 6:30 on WGN-TV. Take a couple phone calls when we get back. We got Mike on the line. Wants to talk a little White Sox with us. That's coming up next right here, 720 WGN.
Our defense has just absolutely sucked.
Hawk Harrelson, changing the TV side of things this year, it sounds like. Hawks just doing the road games.
You like my...
Get a little bit of a different setup there.
I think maybe he likes my idea, and maybe you do too, for the White Sox as far as like their just kind of overriding plan for them right now. Just get a really good defensive team behind your pitching and just fill it in.
There is nothing... I agree with you. What was it? The season of where they spent the last 3 weeks of the year falling away to the White Sox, Robin's first year. And then the next year, it was great pitching performance after. There is nothing more frustrating in baseball than wasting good pitching. There's nothing more frustrating in baseball than doing that.
As you heard from Hawk Harrelson right there.
Yep, it's exactly what he's talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Mike's been on the line for a little bit. And Byron, what's up, Mike?
Hey, fellas, I'm so glad they got rid of Flowers.
Tell us why.
Avila. I think he's a better catcher overall. I think he's got a better arm going to second. You know, Flowers, too many pass balls, couldn't hit, you know, all the time when you needed to drive in those major runs. Yeah, I'm just so much happier, you know.
He caught a Cy Young Award winner in Verlander. He caught one in Scherzer. He's been behind the plate for no-hitters. He should have been there for Galarraga, too. That was the
oh, that's right, the Jim Joyce game. That's right.
Right, and I'm also psyched about, you know, how much worse can LaRoche be compared to last year or this year?
Sure. I mean, that's a question.
There's going to be some upside there.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Mike. Alex Avila is a guy, too, who at the very least, you know, you look through his his first four seasons in the bigs with the Tigers. And granted, that first season, 2009, he's only playing, 30 games or so, a little outbalanced. But it's a 360 on base.
Yeah.
And if you can get, if you get a 360 on base out of Alex Avila, you look like a damn genius. 340? Great. That's fine.
I think it's a very fair gamble. The guy had a bad knee last year. It greatly impacted his play, at least in the first half of the season. He's going to be leaving his father, who's now the GM there.
Now the GM of the Tigers. That's
which,
right.
I mean, is there anything that screams motivation more than your dad not wanting you, saying, Pops, I'm going.
Striking it out on your own?
Yeah.
I'm going to show you, old man.
Right. I'm going to the White Sox, and I'm coming back to Comerica.
You think he's
going to
have tears every time he steps to the plate trying to prove his old man wrong? I don't understand. Where are we going here?
I just feel like there's something that can be parlayed there into a nice season. I like, listen, and De'Aaron Navarro, talking about the White Sox catching, that guy's solid hitter. I mean, you're giving up something behind the plate, but, I mean, how much are you really giving up behind the plate?
Well, it's something to be said for a guy who knows what he's doing behind the plate and knows what he's capable of doing. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to have a guy making a snap throw down to first that you can't make. That's not going to happen. It's just going to trickle by the first, and then you're giving up a bag kind of thing. I think De'Aaron's a smart guy now. Good Lord, he's been playing the game long enough. He kind of knows how it works.
I'm curious. I know we got Wildcat Insider coming up here, but Connor, you're projecting big things in the next couple of weeks for the White Sox. I'm curious if you'd like to go out on a limb and say what that would be.
We'll get to that. We do have the Wildcat Insider coming up, so maybe we do that in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll get some things. We'll get it back-centered to baseball here. But Northwestern's doing some fun and interesting stuff. Dr. Jim Phillips going to join us just after the 4:30 news. And head coach of the Northwestern basketball team. I'm sorry, I keep on doing this wrong. The 7-1 Northwestern men's basketball team, Chris Collins, is going to join us
awesome. At
4:45. So we'll get you posted on everything Cats. That's coming up right here, WGN.
Wildcats of Northwestern, Evanston, Illinois.
It's time for Wildcat Insider. On the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Happy Saturday afternoon to you. Thanks for having us on. As we are in our Wildcat Insider portion of The Beat, I'm Mark Harmon. He is Connor McKnight. Pleased to bring in the outstanding athletic director from your Northwestern Wildcats, Dr. Jim Phillips, on the line. Jim, let's start out with the football and the matchup on New Year's Day. The number 23-ranked Tennessee Volunteers in the 30th annual Outback Bowl. Were you happy with, I mean, it's hard to say that we weren't, because that would be kind of not politically correct, but I assume that you're happy with going to the Outback Bowl on New Year's Day.
Well, first of all, happy holidays to you guys.
Yes.
We haven't had a chance to connect in the last couple of weeks, but to answer your question directly, I was thrilled, and the student-athletes were fantastic and excited when we announced that we were going to go down to Tampa to play 23rd-ranked Tennessee, a program that has a lot of history and tradition. The only thing Fitz asked me was, make sure Peyton Manning doesn't show up, because that was the last time that Northwestern and Tennessee played in the 97 Citrus Bowl, and that didn't go so well. So Peyton Manning will officially not be suiting up in Tennessee Orange, and we're thrilled. I mean, January 1st bowl game, it's the first game of the day. It's unencumbered for the first hour. It's 11 o'clock local time, so from 11 to 12, when people are just waking up from, you know, the post-celebration of New Year's Eve, they'll get a chance to tune in the Wildcats, which I just think is fantastic. And to be 13th ranked by the CFP, I think just says a lot about a 10-2 season that's just been semi-magical.
Yeah, this is a great bowl game, Dr. Jim. When I was in college, I got a chance to cover this one. It's a fun one to be at if you're a student. It's a fun one to be at if you're alum. It's right in the it's in the correct spot in the day, like you mentioned. This is just, you know, you kind of let college football and the bowl season kind of wash over you. This one, though, is a spotlight. This one's a focus in that morning, and it's whether you're, you know, finishing off whatever you left over from the night before or starting a whole new breakfast, this is a good one to sit down and enjoy.
It is, and as you said, Connor, there's just great history and tradition. It's the 30th year for the Outback Bowl. The Outback sponsor is the longest sponsor to date of any of the 40 bowl games, so it shows you their involvement. We had a chance this past week to go down to Tampa for 2 days, myself and Coach Fitz and several of our administrators, including Paul Kennedy and others, to get a chance for the site visit. The stadium is fantastic.
Yeah.
A pro NFL stadium. The Bears, in fact, are going to be there on the Sunday prior to the game, so I think we'll sneak over and maybe see some of the Bears-Bucks game. But the city of Tampa, as you mentioned, Connor, it's just so beautifully set. The harbor area and the water and Clearwater Beach and all the events that will lead up to the Friday game against Tennessee will just be great for the student athletes, fans, alums, season ticket holders, you know, kind of Northwestern Nation head south for a week at a really good time.
You mentioned you get to see the Bears beforehand. I wouldn't be all that surprised if a couple of Bears scouting staff stayed behind and watched the Outback Bowl. Maybe for you guys, sophomore linebacker Anthony Walker can't leave yet, but he might be on some teams' radars. Dean Lowry, who I think I mentioned it last week. I think we had Anthony Walker on in one of the final weeks of the season, and I kind of admitted to Anthony my man crush on Dean Lowry. It got a little weird. But the kid played a fantastic season, and I imagine he's got plenty of teams looking at him as things go on for him. And all of them, all Big Ten, 8 Wildcats on all Big Ten teams, and smart kids, too.
Yeah, no, you're right about Anthony Walker. He's really a special player, and I think his best years are ahead of him. Dean Lowry has been such a staple on the defensive line. And, shoot, you're not the only guy that's got a man crush on him. He's a great young guy.
Yeah.
He's a guy that stands and represents the university so well. A great student, a great individual. He's been involved in so many of our community service projects. And then he's just a lights-out football player. So when we line up against Tennessee, that won't be the last football game that Dean Lowry plays, mm-hmm. and I would project. So it should be fun. And as you mentioned, I'm really proud of the, you know, 8 Wildcats that are on all Big Ten teams. But for both you guys, you know, for us, it just continues to be about the foundation of Northwestern and our academic success, which just came out maybe 2 weeks ago or so. We had 103 academic all Big Ten honors across 6 sports. We don't have a lot of sports in the fall, so out of 6 sports to have 103 of those student athletes is just ridiculous. We had 39 honorees on football, which topped our 38 from last year, and it's number one in the Big Ten. And, you know, the graduation rates came out. We were at 97%, so there's just a lot of pride in playing on a New Year's Day ball game, number 13th in the country, but then also having those accolades academically. So I'm really proud of the young men and women that represent us so well.
We're going to talk with Northwestern basketball coach Chris Collins coming up after Jim, so stay tuned for that as well. And women's basketball, 8-0, Dr. Jim, and they play at 2 o'clock tomorrow, ranked 12th in the country. My man crush happens to be on the Wildcat point guard, Bryant McIntosh, who's been phenomenal this season, and 7-1, Jim, and I know that you guys don't like to talk about it this early in the season, but it's starting to feel like a team that has the capability of going to the tournament. Am I going too far?
Mark, every time we get together on Wildcat Insider, you always say that to me.
Every time.
As I've told you before, you're getting the first ticket to the NCAA tournament when we go, so don't worry about that. And I love your excitement and enthusiasm. But you're right, we're off to a great start. When I think about 12th ranked in women's basketball, 13th ranked in men's basketball, and last week we got votes in the AP top 25, that's a pretty good place for Northwestern. And you mentioned Bryant McIntosh. He really makes us go. He's averaging nearly 17 points a game and 6 or 7 assists a game. But Trey Demps is a fifth-year senior that really has been the staple. He's playing a lot of minutes per game, and he and BMAC have really held the backcourt down. But it's an exciting team, and I want folks to get out. We play Chicago State tomorrow. It's always a nice local rivalry. I don't think people probably give Chicago State enough credit. The Illini beat them earlier in the year on a three-pointer at the buzzer down in Springfield, and it'll be a good matchup. But we have several games this week, including Chicago State on Sunday. But come on out and see the Wildcats play.
Just want to let you know, I'm bringing the whole family tomorrow night. We're going to have a little dinner afterwards, 6 o'clock tip, right after Bears postgame, Dr. Jim. And by the way, thank you for scheduling the bowl game right by my tennis camp, which I do at the end of the year. So it's going to be a 3-hour drive over. I'm going to come there, be there New Year's Day, spot for Dave Bennett, do some on-air work. Hey, last thing, we're going to ask Chris the same thing here. Randy Peterson's been covering Iowa athletics for 40 years. I'm sure you know the story. He got run into and he broke his leg when the Cyclones rushed the court the other night coming back from 20 down to beat Iowa. So now there seems to be a movement about court storming. Where do you come out on should student athletes be allowed to storm the court after huge wins?
Yeah, well, I think you have to provide a safe environment for the student athletes that are trying to get off the court, the coaches, the opposing team. And now, you know, poor Randy and what he's gone through, I think we probably hadn't paid much attention to the media, but sometimes when you have the media courtside, you want student athletes to be able to, again, physically get off the court without any harm, whether you're the home team or visiting team. But part of the pageantry of college athletics is the fun environment that students create. And so you got to do it in a safe way. I think Iowa State, because I followed it pretty closely, everybody says they did a really good job, and Randy's injury was just kind of a freak thing, not necessarily the fault of game management or anything like that. But, Mark, you bring up a good point. It can happen, and it happens in football games where people rush the field and those types of things, and it's terrible when we have an injury like Randy suffered. But I think we can all do a better job. So there's a lesson learned from the Iowa State-Iowa game for sure.
Yeah. Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern Athletic Director, will be talking to him again soon before the Wildcats take on Tennessee in the Outback Bowl on New Year's Day. Big Ten Conference play starting soon, and we'll talk a little bit of basketball with Chris Collins on the other side. Dr. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be with you guys. Have a great holiday season. We'll be in touch soon, and go Cats.
You got it. Go Cats it is. Dr. Jim Phillips here on Northwestern Wildcat Insider. Chris Collins on the other side of a quick timeout here on 720 WGN.
Wildcat Insider rolling on. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Connor McKnight. 720 WGN. Northwestern's basketball team 7-1. Chicago State at Welsh Ryan Arena. I'll be there tomorrow night with my entire family. If you don't go to the game tomorrow night, I will not like you, Connor McKnight.
Well, I didn't realize that you were extending the invite. You're going to hang out with the family.
You can come to dinner after. It's going to be a big deal. The head coach of the Northwestern basketball team, Chris Collins, is with us here on 720 WGN. Chris, let's pick up the conversation. We're just talking to your fine athletic director, Dr. Jim Phillips, about court storming and Randy Peterson. 40 years covering Iowa and Iowa State basketball for the Des Moines Register, ends up breaking his leg, kind of getting spun around. He wasn't trampled or anything like that, but he broke his leg. You, of course, when you were a little bit younger, were playing for Duke, and if you beat Duke, you do storm the court. What are your thoughts about court storming? Because I think it's a great tradition. It's sad that Randy got hurt, but I'd hate to see it go away.
Yeah, you know what, I'm one for excitement with the college games and with the fans and the students and everything. So I'm all for it as long as it's done, there's a good control from the security and the people at the home arena about, you know, the other team's coaches, the other team's players. You know, as long as you get everybody off the court in a safe fashion. You know, the only times that it became a little bit, you know, obviously a couple of times it was scary when, we had lost the game, whether I was coaching or playing at Duke, and, you know, the fans just bum rush the court, and you're getting pushed, you're getting thrown, and you're trying to get off the floor. And that's the only time I think it gets a little bit scary is as long as you can get the opposing team and their coaches off the floor. I think I'm all for, having the excitement on a big win. I mean, that's part of the fun of a college event is having that enthusiasm and passion and winning a big game.
So you had students running up at you saying, get out of here, Collins, that type of stuff?
Yeah, I got pushed a couple times, and in your instinct, remember now, if you lose a game like that, you're not in the best of moods.
No, not even close.
So you're already a little bit angry. You're already a little bit somebody grabs your shoulder, somebody pushes you, or somebody gets up in your face. You know, it can cause a problem. It doesn't take much for there to be something to happen. So I think overall it's a good thing, though. I'm for it. And I think a lot of these conferences and schools have done a good job with the security. If they see that it's about to happen or they see it's, they usually do a pretty good job of ushering the other team and their coaches off the floor. So there's no little skirmish or anything that happens or injuries. I mean, I hated to see that the reporter got hurt because that game was such an awesome game. I had a chance to see it, and the excitement and the atmosphere was so great. And you hear someone breaks a leg like that, it's disappointing because there was so much fun about that game the other night.
Coach, I'm looking through the non-conference portion of the schedule here, and I'm wondering if you have, as a head coach, if you have the luxury or the time or the focus to put into like the larger scheme of, all right, here's what we'd like to get done. You know, you finish your camps and you get into the non-conference portion of the season. Do you have a checklist of things you'd like to have accomplished by the time conference play rolls around, whether those are big, you know, macro things or little things like Brian McIntosh needs to, you know, make 17 passes into the key to make the correct play. You know, how detailed does it get before we get into conference play here?
Yeah, I think they're more broad, you know, goals. Obviously, you want to continually be getting better. You want to be on an upswing trajectory as a team.
Sure.
A big part of the early season is figuring out your rotations and kind of how you use your team and how you're subbing and what things look good out there, what are your weaknesses. I think the main goal you have is you don't want to have too many missteps in November and December, because if you have aspirations to do something in March, you know, that you can look back at the beginning of the season that can either make or break your season, as much as the conference is really important. So, you know, I think it's a big time. There's always some little bit of interruptions during the non-conference. For instance, we just had our final exams this week. Mm. So you kind of have games and then you deal with some interruption academically. There's the holidays with Thanksgiving, with Christmas. So, you know, the non-conference, it's kind of a unique time. It's good to get started. And, you know, each school kind of strategically puts their schedule together. Who do you want to play? When do you want to play them? What kind of team do you have? So how do you want to challenge your team? And what are your kind of main goals before you get into the conference season?
Cats with some huge wins on the road here, Chris. I mean, beating Virginia Tech, winning an ACC game. You beat Missouri down in Kansas City, which is never easy. And even the Columbia win at home. I mean, that is a senior-laden team that looks like they could play in the tournament. I mean, those are three huge wins for you guys. I'm assuming that you're super happy with where you're at right now.
I am. I'm really pleased. You know, we had tough news right before. We were excited about our team. We had gone on a European trip this summer to Spain and played well and felt good about our pieces. And then, you know, a week before our first game, it was learned that one of our best players, Vic Law, was going to be out for the season. And it kind of really threw in a wrench. He was a big part of a lot of things we were doing and, you know, caused us to kind of on the fly figure out how we were going to make things happen and do things. And for us to get through these first eight games and be 7-1, and like you said, have the wins that we've had. Even the game we lost against North Carolina, I think it gave our guys a lot of confidence because of how well we played in that game. You know, it was a really contested game for most of the night. And I think our guys came out of that game feeling like, you know what, like we can be a pretty good team if we play well. And so things have been good. I'm really pleased with how we're playing. And now coming off this break, I'm anxious to, we have five more games here before we get in with Big Ten play. They're all going to be important for us to continue to push forward as we try to maximize our group.
Are you trying to figure somebody out as a starter between Falzone and Scotty Lindsay at that three spot, or have you kind of, you think you'll settle in before the conference season starts?
Yeah, I'm still figuring out with that spot. You know, that was where Law was playing. And, right. You know, so when he went down, trying to figure out the rotations the best we could. And we really have kind of three guys that have all played really well for us in that spot, whether it was Lindsay, Falzone, and then Taphorn in the last couple games has given us a good lift. So, you know, all of those guys have had their opportunities. I've started some games with Lindsay, some games with Falzone, and the last couple I've gone with a more veteran lineup, starting Scotty Lindsay, which, you know, sometimes I think can be good. You give your younger players a chance to come off the bench and kind of get a feel for the game. So it takes that pressure of the starting away. So, you know, for now we've been going with Lindsay, and I like the way that looks. And I've always been one to tinker with things, though, so I never stand pat if I don't feel like we're playing as well as we should. And so that, I think it'll be an ongoing thing if we need to change it.
Your dad going to be there tomorrow night?
He's going to be there. He's been working a little bit. They got him going with some games, but he's back in town, and he'll be in Welsh Shrine cheering us on.
You know, he goes through two buckets of popcorn every game. Not to be the weird guy that's looking at your dad going two buckets. It's impressive. I mean, no, most people go one. You know, Coach Doug goes two. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's part of his, you know, it's the curse of knowing so much about the game and being a coach. You can't just be a fan. He knows all the things that can go wrong in the game, so it's hard for him to sit through those things. So I think the popcorn is a nice little diversion from some of his nerves.
No doubt about it. Coach Collins, appreciate you stopping by. Thanks a ton. We'll talk to you again soon, and best of luck against Chicago State coming up.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks,
absolutely. Chris Collins, Northwestern basketball head coach. They are 7-1, and like I said, they get Chicago State. That's tomorrow night, right? Yeah, tomorrow night.
6 o'clock. You'll hear it on 1,000 because we have Blackhawks hockey
that's
here.
Right.
That's reporting, Connor. Not many people could tell you that his dad goes 2 buckets of popcorn.
I don't think anyone can tell you that, other than his dad.
I'm there.
Now, we're talking about the jumbo buckets, popcorn. This isn't like, I'll have a popcorn. This is the bucket popcorn.
And Chris nailed it, too.
Oh, he's completely right.
It's just nerves.
Absolutely.
And he's got to have something going on.
Uh-huh.
Don't
blame him at all.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do to get through one. 312-981-7200 is the fun. And we're going to talk a little Bears with Adam Hogue on the other side of the 5 o'clock news. They get Washington this week. We'll figure out what needs to happen for a Bears winner and what, in the name of all that's good, what's going on with Kevin White? Should be interesting. That's coming up next, 720 WGN.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi.
Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Bear Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
That's our guy, Adam Hogue, asking questions that need answers. He covers the Bears and does it well for WGN.com/sports. And, of course, you know, he's our Bears guy on every show that's ever aired here on WGN. This is The Beat, and we get him now. Adam, good to have you, my friend. Appreciate you coming on. Let's talk a little Bears and Washington coming up on Sunday. I know a lot of people think the Bears can win this thing, but I feel like that's mostly because they're playing Washington and not so much just because of faith in the Bears.
That's not a good sign.
Adam, can you hear us? Yeah, it's all right. We'll have to get back to Adam in a minute here. I don't know where he went, but
I think Adam might need to segue over to the phone.
Adam, can you hear us?
No, you see, Adam's going to go over to the phone right now. Connor, and we're going to talk about John Fox and Kevin White. Everybody seems to know that I think everyone seems to know that Kevin White is out for the year, except for the head coach of the Chicago Bears, who obviously knows himself but is unwilling to say that because he wants to keep that secretive for the Redskins on Sunday.
That would be typical of John Fox, I think, and probably typical of a lot of coaching staffs, you know, that they want to keep the actives and inactives, you know, on the back burner. But I have heard different things all throughout. And John Fox was one of the guys saying, you know, we haven't made that call
yet. Yeah, I'm good
now. I believe we have Adam back here. Adam, thanks for, I apologize. I've probably spilled something on the board here to rest everything. But wondering what you know about Kevin White, I suppose. Let's start there.
Yeah, well, you know, from what I was told yesterday, the final decision on Kevin White has not been fully made yet. I don't want to completely discredit the report that came out in the Tribune that said he was done for the year, especially because Dan Weider, who reported that, is got a very good track record, and usually when he reports something, it's true. But from my gathering and trying to confirm that yesterday at House Hall, you know, I was told by multiple people that final decision has not been made. Now, that doesn't mean that Dan's report is completely wrong. I mean, that might be where they're leaning towards right now. That may sort of been the plan all along. We've certainly kind of had whiffs of that and of that understanding. And I think overall, the optimism about Kevin White has been playing this year has been pretty low until maybe the last couple weeks when he finally returned to practice. So I would say at this point, it doesn't look likely that he'll play. But from what my understanding is that I could dig up yesterday, there is going to be some kind of meeting after this game Sunday against the Redskins to kind of make a final decision, let this weekend's results play out, see where the Bears are in the playoff race, how realistic that is. And there's a couple things that factor in here, one of which is Marquise Wilson going on IR today, and another is just, do they want to have Kevin White practice in the last few weeks of the season, even if he's not going to play? So if you want to do that, you got to bring him up to the 53-man roster.
See, for me, and listen, you can't jump into their heads and see what they're thinking, but if the guy's healthy to play, I would think you'd want him out there regardless, whether in the playoff chase or not. You'd want him getting experience. And if he's hurt or you have to push him, then you wouldn't want him playing regardless either. Like, to me, it all comes down to health. It has nothing to do with what they're doing on the field. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that he should be out there no matter what?
No, I'm saying if he's healthy, he should be playing, and if he's not, he shouldn't. I wouldn't push him if he isn't healthy if they're in it, and I wouldn't sit him if he's healthy if they're out of it. I'd want him to get experience.
Well, I think what's tough here is the deadline, because it's kind of forcing the Bears to make a decision this week when maybe they're not quite ready. And because, we got to be careful with what's being said by the Bears. All right. So John Fox said Monday that the leg is healed. It is healed. The bone is healed. The rod being in there, everything's good to go. But there's a couple things. There's a discomfort from the screws that are in there. And then there's also muscle atrophy from having to be off that leg for as long as he was and trying to get those equal. So is he past the point where you're kind of risking that stress fracture? Probably. But is he at the point where he needs to be mentally to be able to get out there and play a football game? And also from a conditioning standpoint, I don't think he's there yet. I think that's the issue. So I don't know that that's going to be solved in a week. And so that's the thing here. You can you stash him on your roster for a couple days or a couple weeks? And is it even worth it when, like I said last week when I was on with you guys, they're running out of games here.
Right. And I wonder, you know, how much is it worth? Is it worth a roster spot to just have him practice? You know, I mean, how much can you learn? How comfortable can you get if you're only able to go, I don't know, 30 reps in practice as opposed to a regular 50. I'm just throwing hypothetical numbers out there. But, you know, how much better can you get just working at practice speed, not working in games? And what's the cost-benefit of that given the roster spot that he's taken up?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's tough too because I think there is value in practicing.
I agree.
And work, because remember, guys, if he gets put on IR this week, he can't. There's not really going to be a practice, you know, a team practice where team drills are run until May in OTAs. Now, there's workouts, you can get on the field and run around, and, you know, they can go down to Nashville again with Jay Cutler and do all this. But in terms of an official practice run by the coaches with team drills, that will not happen again until May. And so I think there is some value to having them out there in practice. Now, also, practice time is limited, and the amount of reps you can actually get to prepare for your game on Sunday is limited. So when Kevin White says that he's doing some 11-on-11 work, which he did say this week, that is, any kind of 11-on-11 work he's doing with the number one offense has to be limited if he's not going to play on Sunday. So, in other words, how much reps did he actually get with Jay Cutler this week?
Uh-huh.
Probably not many, and I was told by a source that a lot of his work in those 11-on-11 has actually been on scout team and getting the defense ready.
Sure.
You know, there's a fast guy named DeSean Jackson who happens to play for the Washington Redskins. I don't know. Maybe he's mimicking him in practice, because that's the kind of stuff you do on scout teams. So that's part of this, too. How much work is he actually getting in the practices, and how much will he continue to get? And that's ultimately, that's what's being discussed right now. And I think all signs are probably pointing to that Tribune report and saying, okay, he's probably going to not play in any games this year. But, again, from what I gather, that is not a finality yet. That has not totally been decided.
You know, I'll be honest. I think when we started this season, well, I shouldn't say when we started it, but when we determined that Kevin White was going to be on that PUP list and not, you know, as active for at least the first handful of weeks, the IR return list too, that, you know, you kind of had this, you had one take on the first draft of Ryan Pace. Now that Eddie Goldman has shown up on occasion, now that you've seen, you know, some of the undrafted guys, a guy like Bryce Callahan play a little bit, I know Adrian Amos has made a mistake or two, but I happen to like some of the nasty that he brings in the defensive backfield. I think, you know, the ticker is good on what Ryan Pace has done so far. I mean, personnel wise specifically.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think there's been some bumps in the road with the
no doubt
free agent class specifically. I mean, Eddie Royal has been hurt. Pernell McPhee, but I think most of it's still positive because Pernell McPhee's been great. He's been hurt, but playing through it and still been pretty effective. And he's obviously proven to be a pretty good leader in that locker room, being voted a captain. He's going to be part of this thing for years to come.
He's kind of funny, too. He's a funny guy. Funny quote.
I love talking to him.
There you go.
So it's sad that he might not play this week. He's listed as doubtful because that means we won't be able to talk to him after the game. But some of the other signings, though, Jarvis Jenkins on a one-year deal, that's paid off. So there's been a lot of good. Tracy Porter, I mean, that was another one. So mostly good across the board. You know, maybe you throw Antrell Roll in the conversation as one that didn't work out. But none of these have been huge busts where you threw a ton of money. You know, none of this is like a Jared Allen signing or something like that. So And then you look at the draft class, and while Kevin White hasn't played, there's a lot of positives with Eddie Goldman, like you mentioned, and Jeremy Lankford and Adrian Amos, and most of these guys have really paid off. So I think with the understanding in the NFL that you're not going to hit on every free agent signing, you're not going to hit on every draft pick. That's a given. It's you sort of got to look at this like batting average in baseball, except you want to be batting higher than what a normal batting average would be. I mean, really, if you're hitting above 500 in football personnel decisions, you're doing pretty good, because a lot of it's not going to work out. You look at the pass regime, and the problem was, you know, Phil Emery probably batted below the Mendoza line.
I love a Mendoza line reference, especially in December. Does the team's performance and coaching staff's work with this offensive scheme and the defensive side of the ball, too? I guess we can incorporate both sides. Do either of those trajectories give you an answer on whether or not Jay Cutler is coming back next season?
Well, what do you mean by the coaching staff being
in terms of their work with the offense, in terms of where they want to go next? Because I obviously Ryan Pace has a decision to make. I mean, from a financial standpoint, I suppose is probably an easy way to put it. But you know, we know the quarterbacks pretty well coming into this draft. You know, they're not all that great. You're taking flyers on some guys. If Paxton Lynch is your number one, then I don't know that I necessarily want to have that first quarterback off the board, or at least make a franchise out of him. So, you know, I just wonder if style of play, if the way this ball club has been coached over the last handful of weeks gives you an indication as to whether or not there's been a decision made.
Well, I think there probably has been a decision made. I mean, I don't really know how you can go away from Jay Cutler at this point. He's proven that he can still be pretty effective. And, man, could you imagine this offense without Jay? Right
yeah, now? I can. I saw it. Jimmy Clausen was there. It was disgusting.
It's not good. So, you know, it's funny looking back on it, and we do know that there were some trade discussions that happened with Jay Cutler last offseason, and Jay's even referenced the rumors that came up on draft day. Now, whether or not that included Tennessee, the number two pick, and maybe the Bears would end up with Mariota, maybe that's a scenario where you're looking back on it, you go, okay, well, maybe that would have been justified, possibly. Mariota still got to show a little bit more for me, as much as I did like him coming out of college, and he's been okay this year.
Right.
But the point I'm trying to get to is, I don't know what the other discussions were, but you got to imagine that Ryan Pace, John Fox, sort of looking back on that going, yeah, that might have been a mistake in hindsight had we actually pulled the trigger on something like that. Because, look, you can develop somebody else. You can look towards the future while still keeping Jay Cutler as your quarterback next year. I have no problem with the Bears using an early draft pick on a quarterback. If the Bears believe that that's the guy for the future and they want to develop him for a couple of years, that does not mean you also need to get rid of Jay Cutler right away. So, you know, I'd feel pretty confident saying Jay Cutler is going to be part of this organization next year. But it will be interesting to see if they address the quarterback position in some other way. In terms of right now as a backup, I think they like David Fales. I think their move to get rid of Jimmy Clausen and keep Fales and elevate him to the roster shows you that. But I don't think Fales is the answer either as your future starter. So that is a storyline we will be watching this offseason.
Up against the break here, Adam, but just want to get one more thing out. Martellus Bennett put on IR, right. Not going to see him this year. I don't think he'll be back next year. I just want to throw one word of caution on that. Brandon Marshall, everybody wanted him out of town, and maybe he wouldn't have been as great here, but the guy's had a phenomenal season for the Jets. He's over 1,000 yards catching the ball. He's caught it 83 catches on the year.
83.
Man. I mean, Martellus, people are down on Martellus. That guy's a good player, I think he's missed if he's gone. You can't tell me Zach Miller's the answer going forward. The guy's been lucky to stay on the field as long as he has. Do you think that decision is most likely that he's out of here?
If I had to guess, I would say he's probably gone, especially because there's no guarantee money left on that contract. But you know what? The point with Brandon Marshall, I understand the numbers. What John Fox and this coaching staff has done with the entire roster, not including getting Brandon Marshall out, fixing the culture inside the locker room, that has been worth a lot more than how many catches Brandon Marshall has had in New York this year. Sure, if you look at it exclusively, you'd say, yeah, man, the Bears could have used Brandon Marshall this year, another target to throw the ball to. But remember, they ended up drafting Kevin White, and they thought he was going to be on the field. So there's a lot of factors. If you look at the timeline that played out, and, you know, all things being equal, the Bears probably didn't get the value of what Brandon Marshall gives you on the field back in that trade, although it did turn into Adrian Amos, so it's not like they blew the draft pick. But with his money and his attitude, and we've seen this play out time and time again with him in Denver and Miami and then in Chicago, his first year is usually pretty good in a new place.
Yeah.
Come back to me in a year and tell me how Brandon Marshall's doing in New York, because that's how this always goes with that guy. So I don't think it's really fair to look at it that way. How it applies to Martellus, I don't think Martellus is as nearly as big of an issue as Brandon was in that locker room. But I do think that it still irks management that he held out the way he did in the offseason. I think that is more of a factor than anything happened or was reported the last few weeks with him and the Bears.
He's Adam Hogue. He covers the Bears for WGN over at WGNradio.com/sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Hogue. He will be at the ballgame tomorrow. Thanks, Adam.
All right, guys. See you.
You got it. That's, we'll come back. We got the 5:30 news, rather, real quickly here. And then we've got a little more baseball and a little more Bears, too, because I don't think we're necessarily done with those monsters of Midway.
And hopefully we'll jump into the storm in the court, too. I want to know if people think that or want that to end.
312-981-7200, WGN.
When the hell is Gase going to stretch this field? Quit playing scared-to-death football. Field's 100 yards long, and at the end of it, on each side, is a thing called the goal line. Now, beyond that, there's another 10 yards. It's called the end zone. Here's, go for it. Try it when you're on the 20, 25, 30-yard line. Go for it. This game should have been over. Over.
Zed Obradovich on the Hamp, OB, and Cause postgame show on here, on right here, 720 WGN. God, is that... You know things are rough when OB has to explain the geography of a football field to you. That's all I can tell you there.
It was a new one last week with us being on the air while the game was ending.
And, oh, I'm sure.
And ending in the fashion that it did with a 71-yard touchdown bomb as OB spins around his chair, looks at the microphone, looks at me, and says, shut up, I'm going to have a meltdown. Go, let me have my moment, please.
I thought of you when Robbie Gould missed the 36-yarder. I didn't think, oh, how bad for – my first thought was – this Mark Carman is going to have an afternoon with these gentlemen. That's what he's going to have.
We should have asked Hogue about that. What in the world, Robbie Gould?
Sometimes you miss him, I guess. I don't know what else. Sometimes you miss him. And he's the ninth most accurate field goal kicker in the history of the NFL. This week, Chicago's best is rolling, filling and frosting their way through Chicagoland. Tune in to see Chicago's best bakeries. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN. We got the 5:30 news on the other side of a very quick break. We'll talk a little Bears with you after that here on 720 WGN.
This game should have been over. Over.
So have you reached your decision on Kevin White as to what's going to happen with him?
No, I think I've expressed we have till Tuesday. We just got to take it a day at a time.
There's a report that says you guys have already decided he's not going to play this year.
There's always a lot of reports, but then there's facts.
Get tough.
John Fox.
Yeah.
Tough game played by tough men on tough grass and
Fox.
Tough weather. I like that we spent an entire segment and a half talking with our guy Adam Hogue, who covers the Bears here for WGN. It does a really great job. Check it out, WGNradio.com/sports, or just follow him on Twitter, at Adam Hogue. We spent a whole segment talking about the Bears without actually talking about the Bears-Washington matchup tomorrow.
I was going to...
Watch it. It'll be entertaining. If you're entertained by that, have fun. Sit yourself down for a good nooner. Everybody loves a good nooner. And then you're just there for the rest of the day of your NFL day. That's fine. Fine.
That's, no one's ever put it better than everybody loves a good nooner.
They do. Everybody does. Everyone sits down and watches this thing.
It's been all season nooners. It's been a consistent noon for the most part. And I could tell you just this about the Washington Redskins. They are awful on the road. For whatever reason.
Ofer.
Yeah, they're ofer on the year.
So were the Niners.
That's true, too.
The Bears are handing out first road wins to everyone. I think Washington is the only road winless road team.
I mean, they allowed Blaine Gabbert to scramble 44 yards with the game on the line for a touchdown to end your season.
Well, you know,
that's bad.
There's a couple of texts coming in here. This one from the 847. Gabbert threw nothing all day, then a bomb in OT. Total fluke loss. I disagree with that completely. Fluke play, maybe. Busted coverage, sure. The fact that Gabbert connected, fine. You spent all day, and OB was railing about this on the postgame show. I listened to it, railing about this. He just went down the line of the starts of for that Bears offense, 47, 42, 50, on your own 47, their 30, and you punched in three field goals. You should have, the game should have been over. It should have been. You kicked field goals all damn day. You missed a handful of them that cost you, yes, but you should have punched those in for scores. And as much as Adam Gase is getting, and I get it, he's done a pretty decent job with an offense that needed some molding, needed to reshape that quarterback a little bit, and has done, by and large, a decent job of it. But Jay Cutler's last, if not second to last in the league, in red zone efficiency. He's just not connecting on red zone touchdowns. He's just not there. And because you can't punch it in and chip away another touchdown and a half per game, you know, whatever that averages out to, whatever it would be to look at how many close losses you've had this year. And this is what we said going in, too. This team might not be a great team, but it's going to look a lot better and be a little bit less frustrating for you. The only thing I think we missed on is that it is actually pretty damn frustrating to be this close on a couple of games.
And I think we said, well, I know that I said last week, take the Niners. They're not going to cover this team.
You did. You did say. You promised that.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's handling prosperity or whatever you want to put on it, but the Bears, they've done this for years. They have an impressive win on the road, beat a team you don't think they're going to beat. They come home. They're playing a Drekka Society outfit like the Niners, and they make it super interesting. And it started, like last week started, San Francisco could not have looked any worse. They looked incapable of doing anything.
And you wouldn't put them away.
Right. And then
they
just
wouldn't put them away.
And then your season's over. I will throw in there, too, that, you know, Cutler in the red zone, at least, some of that's on him. A lot of it is on Alshon's missed a ton of time this year, and
Martellus, I think Martellus in the red zone, I think everybody expected him to be a big-time target. He obviously out now and had missed that Packers game, but still, I mean, I think you expected more from him there in that area.
There's a thing called the goal line.
Thank you.
Love you, OB.
Thank you, OB.
Yes.
You must cross that goal line, damn it.
This game should have been over.
It should have been.
Take the pigskin over the football, the end zone, and the goal line is what I'm trying to say, and win games. That well, we'll see if they win tomorrow. I think they do win tomorrow, and I think there will be a drop of interest going along the Bears' miracle playoff chances.
They're there. They're there. They are. And the fact that the Vikings lost, you know, the other day, that only helps things. I think the Packers run away with this division now.
Probably so.
I wouldn't have said that. If you'd have looked at me, in fact, I think I did say this. After I left that Lambeau Field Thanksgiving night, I thought that Packer team is going to be lucky to grab a wild card spot. Just because of the way things have been going, some of the things I've heard up in Green Bay from people who are connected to this team, who know what they're talking about.
Your buddies with Rob Domofsky?
It wasn't pretty for a little while. No, Rob and I don't talk. Not anymore. Not since the Helsinki incident of 1901. But it's palpable there. It was palpable there. I don't know if it's completely fixed. Devontae Adams is a drop machine still. But you're right. I mean, there are still miracle chances for that Bears team.
It was a miracle for the Packers. The Lions had him beat. That was unbelievable. Way to go, Aaron Rodgers.
Way to go, Jim Caldwell. Way to go, big guy.
Oh, that's.
We didn't expect a Hail Mary here. Why the hell not? We didn't have Calvin Johnson out there because we didn't expect. Why the hell not? Why didn't you?
Because you're the Lions. The two most interesting.
And you fired everyone like 2 weeks beforehand, gave Jim Bob Cooter a job, which, you know, fine. Things are working out better with Matthew Stafford and old Jim Bob Cooter. But my God, Jim Caldwell, really?
Snap to Rodgers. Scrambles to his left, under pressure, rolling right, escapes, right side looking, rainbows high and deep into the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown, a leaping touchdown catch is made, and the Packers have won.
I was in the shower at the East Bank Club, and it's 10 o'clock at night on a Thursday night. Nobody is in there. There's three lunatics. They just start screaming out. Like, I literally thought like a woman had ran into the men's locker room and was exposing herself. Something was that crazy was going on.
Really?
Well,
I find it interesting that that's your first thought.
Well, I didn't know what it was, I've never heard that. And then I came out of there, and I'm like, hello, anybody, what's going on? Aaron Rodgers threw a 75-yard bomb for a Hail Mary touch. I'm like, oh, my God.
Not that I need you to tell you that. Not that I need to tell you this, but that was Wayne Larrivee on the call at WTMJ. Obviously,
that was Larrivee? Yeah, you do need to tell me that. Are you sure?
Really? It's a familiar voice. He didn't say dagger at any point. I wanted him to put the dagger in.
Start it one more time, please. I refuse to believe that's
really. Wayne. I got to pull the ripcord on the lawnmower one more time for this. Yeah, no, that was Wayne.
Snap to Rodgers. Huh? Scrambles to his left under pressure, rolling right, escapes right side looking. Rainbows okay, high and deep Come into on. The end zone.
I wanted a dagger. Assumed there was a dagger thing. It did sound a little different. I don't know. Maybe that,
it's an older Wayne. If you played some old school WGN Wayne, he would sound like three octaves higher.
Well, I feel like if you played some old school Mark Carmen, you'd probably sound an octave higher.
Oh, you don't want to do that. That would be a bad idea.
The world famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNRadio.com. This year, Chicago's captured in black and white. It's presented in a special, one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2Ks calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and this is the first year it's in all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of our spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that'll change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that's completely 100% original. Go to WGNRadio.com. Scroll down to the feature section and make a purchase of our calendar. A portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar, the 2Ks calendar, available in the feature section at WGNRadio.com.
Your sports world is changing in ways that you may not know, so we're going to talk about that coming back next. Get your thoughts. We'll have some open phone lines for you, 312-981-7200. We'll explain how and why and when next, 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Beat here on 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Mark Carmen. The phone number is 312-981-7200. Little option for you to get involved here, because two things in your sporting viewing world, I guess, really are changing, and one could be on the precipice of changing. Let's deal with a conversation that we had a little bit earlier in the show during the Wildcat Insider portion, both with Northwestern Athletic Director Dr. Jim Phillips and Northwestern basketball coach Chris Collins about the storming of the court situation that you had with the Iowa State game just a handful of days ago. One of the, and I'm going to forget the sports writer's name, but I've read his stuff.
Randy Peterson.
Randy Peterson. I was going to say Jim for some reason. Randy Peterson had his leg broke in a situation where, and from all accounts, it sounds like the stadium security had things fairly well controlled. This wasn't a complete scene of pandemonium and misdirection and nonsense, but it was a court storming. Seemed like things got twisted up and tripped up. Randy broke his leg. So, you know, from one point of view, yeah, the court storming looks cool and it's fun to be a part of. I can't take that away. I can't say that I'm not entertained by, you know, people taking the court. I don't know. It's fun to watch. It's primal, I guess. I have no idea. But on the other side of that is, even if you do it as well as you can, security-wise, you know, safety-wise, people can still get hurt real fast.
Well, Randy was sitting behind the hoop. He got up. He walked to center court. He was going to go through the tunnel there, which apparently he does all the time. But as the court storm was unfolding, he said he was adamant that it wasn't a student. It was an adult who
right.
just kind of caught his leg, and he spun around and mm-hmm. went down and ended up in the hospital, which if you haven't seen the picture online, he's on a gurney at the hospital, and he's still wearing his press pass 4 hours afterwards, which is just an unfortunate picture. The guy doesn't look like he's alive, and he still has his press pass on. And for those of us in the media, that's kind of sometimes how we feel covering these games that no one cares about at times. So there's that. But and Chris Collins said some interesting stuff. You know, you're playing for Duke, right? You're Chris Collins, and you lose to Carolina, and you're probably real irritated. Or you lose to whatever, Clemson, a lesser light. You're really
right.
irritated. And now you're,
even if you had a good game, you're irritated. If you had a bad game, you're even more ticked off.
Right, and now you're walking off the court and some yahoo's running at you. And listen, I went to Iowa. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. I stormed the court.
You've been a yahoo.
Yes.
We've all been a yahoo before.
Were you a yahoo too?
I don't think I was ever. No, I don't think I ever took the court.
Okay, I stormed Michigan.
I was there for that. Well, Illinois fans will remember this. It was a trip that number one, that national title team made up to Madison. They were ranked one at the time, and Wisconsin, I think the Badgers were like 12 or 13, I think, at the time. But Illinois won that game. There was no storming the court that night.
that's too bad for Wisconsin and for you, Connor. So, but at least you don't have that guilt on your conscience.
I'm fine.
I mean, I ran on the court. Was if Chris Webber had been right in front of me or Jalen Rose, I probably would have been a complete moron.
Could have been a Yahoo.
Take that, Webber.
Right. And then C. Webb rolls one across you because he's a kid too and irritated and whatever. And the problem with the court storming, I think, is that even if you do it right, you know, even if you pay as much attention to the safety and procedure as you can, that's not to say that it won't get out of hand once people are down there. You know, I mean, you that group of people, that mass of humanity can turn into, it can turn into T-Box really fast.
Right. And absolutely. And they're throwing.
And T-Box is a horrible place right now. Don't go over to Wrigleyville right now.
Throw in the alcohol.
Right.
You're a college.
And some of those stadiums do.
Well,
some of the arenas do, I should say.
Well, yeah, the arena, some of them sell, but outside of that, I mean, you're a college kid. You think you're not bringing in some flask or something?
At the best case scenario, they've pregamed.
Right. You think Mike Jacobson ever went to an Iowa basketball game
without a hip flask?
I mean, come on. We know that this is the case. So there's that. 312-981-7200. If college basketball got rid of court storming, would you just not have the same excitement for the sport? Because clearly, like ESPN and Fox
and
True
Team, they love shooting it. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, every single network is paying millions and billions of dollars to cover it. They love the court storm.
But if it went away, I feel like you'd miss it for this long. Not that long. Not that long. And then you'd get used to it. And then you'd be, okay, fine. And then you'd tell stories about, I miss it when they storm the court kind of thing. Okay, let's watch the tournament. Let's sit down for four straight days and watch college basketball until our eyes fall out of our sockets. It'd be exactly like that. And that's kind of where this next scenario comes in, too. Some people had been up in arms. And we saw it a couple of times this season in baseball with fans sitting close, you know, right there on the edge of the action, over the dugout, getting hit by bats, balls. I mean, it's a dangerous place. And now Major League Baseball is saying that they want to put up nets. They're recommending, and I imagine it's one of those strong recommendations, like do this else.
Recommendations from the commissioner's office came down this past Wednesday, right? Which, you know, they reviewed everything from the summer and people getting drilled. And, you know, people are, listen, that ball's flying fast.
Right.
So somebody could get killed.
Exactly. Even if you're paying attention, sometimes depending on where you're sitting and how hard where that ball comes off the bat, you don't have a chance.
No.
As much as people would love to tell you that you do. And yeah, the ticket says that the club's not liable for anything, right? I mean, as soon as you enter that ballpark, you're liable for everything that happens to you as far as, you know, ball and bat into the stands. It's going to take one court case to say, no, that's not legally binding. I mean, it's the liability could still be there for a major league club. It's not to say that can't be overturned. And I think, again, you know, if you're in arms about this, if you've got those seats, first off, if you've got the seats within 70 feet of home plate, which is what the requirements are looking like for the netting that Major League Baseball is handing out.
You should want the netting.
And congratulations to you with whatever you're doing in life. Keep doing that. Because if you're sitting 70 feet away from home plate anywhere at a Major League Baseball stadium, you've probably done something right financially with your life.
You're a very wealthy person.
On the other hand, you probably would like to be protected some. Because the three or four insurance policies that you have on yourself, that might be enough. But you might like a piece of netting up in front of you, too.
Yeah, or if your kids are going to the game who maybe are on their phones or something you've provided them, or maybe they're not on their phones but just don't have a great attention span. You'd like to know that they're not going to get drilled. And this is what Major League Baseball is saying. Implementing or maintaining nets or other effective protective screen or barrier of their choosing that shields from line drive foul balls at all field level seats located between the near ends of both dugouts. So the end of the dugouts, from the end of one dugout.
Right.
To the other. So they would be extending the netting at least. I'm a little confused. Is it to the very end of the dugout or is it to where the dugout starts close to home plate? Because if it's to the very end of the dugout, mm-hmm. that's a significant change. If it's just to where the dugout starts, then you're talking about, you know, and I think that's what it is.
Right.
It's really just like an extra section on each side because the netting at Wrigley Field. It's and at U.S. Cellular, it's right by the on-deck circle. So it would just be extending it out like another 15 feet.
Right.
And really, like, for a ball to be hit in that area, highly unlikely. Fouled straight
right.
back all
but the
time.
But the one that goes into that highly unlikely area is a bullet.
Oh, yeah.
An absolute tracer.
But the further you go down the line, though, that thing's still a bullet.
Oh, it's still humming, no doubt.
And there's a great chance. And listen, I like that there's no netting there, but I don't think it's... I think we have to all bite the bullet and realize that, listen, It's a little bit safer, and I've sat behind home plate. I've sat behind the netting. You right. just don't notice it. After
you don't.
You just don't.
You don't. It's about 9 pitches, and then you don't even notice it's there.
And I get that, like, people walk up to the dugout, and they want a ball thrown to them, and
sure.
they want to get an argument
There's
or
ways
an autograph.
Around that. There's ways around that.
There's ways around
There's
that.
There's ushers. I mean, we've got a whole pulley system. We figured out the simple machine.
How fast? I mean, the ball's coming into home plate at, what, 90-plus?
Yeah.
And when you hit it, how fast is it coming off the
200
bat?
200 miles an hour.
No, it's not 200. I think Giancarlo Stanton registered the highest exit velocity this year. I think it was on a home run ball, but I think that was 119 miles an hour.
So 119, yeah, put the netting up, please.
Yeah,
please,
why not?
Please put it up. Not only for the ball, but for the occasions when the bat breaks or
yeah.
the bat flies out of somebody's hand. I mean, I don't mind getting a souvenir at a ball game. I don't want my face to be the thing that catches it.
No, you don't. And we've seen it before. I mean, players.
Plenty of times.
Players have been hit by shattered. Tyler Colvin took a shattered bat and collapsed his lung. I mean, this. He's lucky he got away with just that.
Right, and they've changed the bats, so they break easier, and when they're coming at you now,
they're less charred.
Right, but it's like gladiator style, that thing flying at you.
Yeah.
Right, so 312-981-7200. For those of you sitting in the primetime seats, does this matter to you? Because that's really all that it dramatically is overstating it, but that's all that it impacts, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Let's see. We've got a little bit of baseball talk to do on the other side of the 6 o'clock news. I saw a couple movies over the last handful, and am about to see a movie in about five days and 5.5 hours, something like that, I think is when The Force Awakens comes out. So we'll be talking a little movies on the other side, some sports movie too. I saw what I think is my favorite sports movie of all time the other day. I'll tell you what that is in just a minute here on WGN.
Reynolds, play action fake. Throwing down the middle. Tillman wide open. Jameer at the 30. 25-20. 15-10. 5. Dives to the pylon. Touchdown, Navy midshipman.
The Army-Navy game is held in the final week of the college football season every year, and it is always fun. At least it's always fun for me to watch. I mean, we talk a lot about and give lip service to the pageantry of college football sometimes, and the bowl series has a bunch of it. But this is, I don't know who many of these young men are in the Army-Navy game. All I know is I respect the hell out of them for going out there, doing what they're doing, and serving the way they're serving first and foremost. And then they go out there and play, you know, for a long time, Army, Navy, Air Force, it's all been triple option, get the hell beat out of you football to stay in it and stay close. Navy's actually got a pretty decent football team. They're ranked 21 in the country, and they beat Army 21-17 this afternoon. I don't know. Hopefully you got to sit down and watch some of this as you're driving around and taking care of things throughout the course of your Saturday. If you missed it, the uniforms for Navy especially were awesome. Absolutely. You see these?
I did. It's phenomenal.
So it's Battleship Gray as the accent color all throughout. So first and foremost, it's fantastic. They've got down the leg, Damn the Torpedoes, which is, I guess, the Navy. I guess that's not a war call, but it's the battle cry, I guess. Damn the Torpedoes, down the leg. Awesome. Awesome thing.
I was once recruited to be in the Navy.
Were you really?
Because of my toughness. And I said that I was going to focus on other things in my life. But they really did want me back in the day, Connor.
Did they really?
Yes, they wanted me to come in and steal. They wanted me to protect the goat. You know, that's one of the great traditions of the game.
It is.
Stealing of the mascot.
Yes.
So they wanted me in there just to protect the goat because they thought that I could bond well with the animal.
Pre-game, there's an exchange of hostages before the Army-Navy game. The exchange hostages, it's a very ceremonial thing between the West Pointers and the cadets over there. So you've got the Battleship Gray, Damn the Torpedoes down the leg. Each position group had a different ship. I shouldn't say battleship because some are battleship. A different ship of the Navy on the helmet. And they were all like the quarterback, Navy's quarterback, who we'll get to in just a second, had an Air Force carrier, an aircraft carrier, because they're the quarterback of the Navy. I think the defensive backs were destroyers, if I'm not mistaken. The wide receivers were submarines. It's just fantastic.
You know, they also steal students.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the exchange of hostages before they steal students and then they change them back.
Well, I just thought like originally when it was hostages, it was kind of fictitious things, but they actually take students.
Right.
How is that possible?
It's just, it's a thing. It's what they do.
That's what they do.
I don't know if you saw it too, but the game ended in a pretty spectacular fashion, or at least the last 2 minutes were pretty good. 21-17 Navy lead. Army goes for a halfback pass, swept it out
Halfback throws it up, and Navy ended up picking this thing off right about the 2-yard line. Keenan Reynolds, though, Navy's quarterback, is like the only Navy quarterback to go 4-0 against Army.
Wow.
Pretty cool in and of its own right.
That's an accomplishment.
He is also the NCAA's career leader in rushing touchdowns.
Wow.
In all of the NCAA. Guy's got 83 rushing touchdowns from 2012 until 2015. Number two on the list is Monte Ball, Wisconsin, 2009 to 2012. Travis Prentice. See how many of these guys you remember. Travis Prentice had 73, 96 to 99 at Miami, Ohio.
No chance. Ricky Williams
is on that list.
Okay.
Obviously, University of Texas, he had 72. Ron Dane from Wisconsin, 71. And then you got to scroll pretty far way down to get to an Iowa Hawkeye on this list, Carm. I don't know if I'm still scrolling.
Easy, Connor.
I'm still scrolling.
Does the word Rose Bowl ring a bell
to you? It's a fun time. Enjoy yourself. Actually, Ricky Dobbs of Navy has a 49. He's number 37 on this list. So Navy's got a handful. Pretty cool day. I enjoy watching the Army-Navy game when I can. You know, I've been working the last handful of years, but it's always awesome to have it on in the background.
Yes, and that goes back to, by the way, when college football was college football and kind of the... This morning I was watching North Dakota State and Northern Iowa.
Sure.
And they're tailgating and the whole thing.
Who's the old-timey voice of college football for you? Because I know, and I don't mean to make this a you're older than I thing, but this is when it matters.
You're
Keith Jackson. For me too. And it's weird because you and I are split by about a decade or so. I remember listening to the end of Keith Jackson's career. He was doing specific West Coast games kind of thing, but he'd always do the Rose Bowl, which was awesome. Keith Jackson is the guy for me.
Nelly.
Oh, I love Keith Jackson. It's David Jennings here. He does our Keith Jackson.
That wasn't Keith Jackson?
No, but it's close. But it's really close.
See, I want to tell you that I knew Keith Jackson when Keith Jackson was really cool.
I know. You were prime Keith Jackson years, I bet.
I was prime Keith Jackson years because I'm older than both of you.
It's true. Keith did it for a while. He was rolling with the granddaddy of them all for a while.
Brent was great, too.
Even Musburger?
Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Why did he stop doing college football? Did he step in something along the way?
I think he does.
No, he was. I mean, he used to be
right.
The guy.
He was a primetime guy.
Yeah.
And I think he got caught up in some of ESPN's reallocation of funds, to be honest. I think it was a dollar thing for Brent.
Well, isn't he?
But he still does stuff for the SEC network.
Right. He's the main
But
voice.
He used to be the nighttime. Chris Fowler has since taken that work with Herbstreit.
He's good at his job too, Chris Fowler.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite to the level that I bring in a broadcasting.
No, his travel schedule's okay, right? I mean, you go to the best college football venue.
And then Wimbledon.
Each and every week, and then you have a yearly trip to Wimbledon, and then the Australian Open, and then Paris. That's not a bad travel schedule.
No, that's winning is what that is.
It is. For those who take it like a Bears fan, Chicago Tribune's Sports Plus is for you. You can get award-winning sports-only coverage, insights, and perks at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. I saw what I think is my favorite sports movie of all time the other day. I think you could probably guess what it is. I want to tell you about it a little bit. And you've got some other sports movie crossover things going on in the in your realm up in the holidays. Well, we're going to get to that in just a second.
I'm hoping Connor doesn't ruin the film that he's talking about for those of us who haven't seen it, but maybe he will, and then we'll hold him accountable for the rest of our lives.
Darth Vader is Luke's father. There, I spoiled it for you. 312-901-7200. You got the beat, 720 WGN. Welcome back to The Beat here on 720 WGN. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Mark Carman. And for the purposes of this discussion, I got to tell you that I turned 30 this summer. I am a 30-year-old man. Means something in the context of this discussion, right? Let me explain this to you. I went to go see the movie Creed this last week, right? With Michael B. Jordan and this guy Sylvester Stallone. I don't know if you've seen him in anything.
I've heard of
Sylvester. You're familiar with
Sylvester,
Sly.
Yes.
So I was taken in by the movie. I absolutely loved the thing. And I have it now in my head as one of the best sports movies I've ever seen. That's how highly I thought of this movie. And, you know, we go through the discussion of, okay, best sports movie of all time. Okay, well, you go through the list. You know, whether you like, if you like The Natural, if you're a Bull Durham guy. I love Rudy because I am 30 years old. And when I was a kid, you went to this theater to see Sean Astin in Rudy, and it was amazing. You know, it blew my mind. And I don't, but in a weird way, the Rocky series to me has never been all that connected. And I think it's because of how old I am and when and how old those movies were when I got to the movie watching age. I've always kind of known the Rocky story. I know that he, you know, doesn't win but kind of does win. You know, kind of like Star Wars, everyone knows that Darth Vader is Luke's father. You've never not known that, whether you've seen the movies or not. It's just kind of such a part of the zeitgeist in pop culture that you can't divorce yourself from knowing it. So going to see Creed was, and I don't know if you remember where you were, I don't know if you remember the first time you saw Rocky, the first one, but going to see this movie, I feel like I got a little bit of a taste. Again, this is how good this was. Got a little bit of a taste of what it must have been like to see them do that the first time, to see Rocky the first time through, to have that story played out and the edge that boxing stuff can bring you to, that those scenes can bring you to, the dynamic between Michael B. Jordan, who's fantastic, and I think she won an Oscar at some point, if not for this movie, then for another one, because he's just great. Sly was fantastic. I was blown away by this movie, and I don't know if you've gone to go see it yet, but go see it if you haven't.
I will get to see Creed. I'm excited. And for me, like Rocky 1 and 2, I was too young. Rocky 3 was 1982. I was 9 years old.
Rocky 1 was what? 1970.
I will look.
4? 1976.
No.
Okay, so Rocky 3 is 1983, right? So that's the first one you remember watching, years old?
Yeah, Rocky 1 was 1976.
Oh, okay, 1976.
Okay, so I was 3.
Yeah, you probably would have. I mean, you might have seen it in theaters. You probably wouldn't have remembered much.
79 was 2, so I was 6. Don't remember it. 9 years old for Rocky 3, and I remember hating Mr. T, but really loving his character, too. I mean, who didn't get into a Clubber Lang? And that was a battle royale. I mean, that was real.
Sure.
That was absolutely good versus evil, the whole deal. 4 and 5 were awful, and I didn't. I mean,
Rocky 4 is Ivan Drago, right?
Yeah, it was. Some people like it awful, and Rocky 5 I didn't see.
Rocky 5 was the one where Sly inexplicably comes back at age like 65 or something and fights the heavyweight champion, the current heavyweight champion, right?
Right. But, I mean, everybody's saying that. What was so good about Creed?
I talked with people who do remember seeing Rocky for the first time around and experiencing that and being, you know, cognizant of it. And just apparently the emotion that it pulled, the rags to riches kind of story that Rocky was,
mm-hmm.
was a different story than got told in Creed. A very different thing. I mean, the guy, the whole thing is a silver spoon he's got there in front of him, and he's trying to push it away the entire time and make it on his own. The dynamic was great. The soundtrack was fantastic. That's why I laughed a little bit at Gonna Fly Now when we came back. When you play, you know, the original version of Gonna Fly Now, it sounds pretty dated. But that's also a song that's been like remixed and dubbed over and had some more bass thrown in it over the last handful of movies and a handful of soundtracks that it plays. It still plays. You know, once there are, it's not going to surprise anybody, that gets sprinkled into Creed in a very particular certain part. And your heart just goes, hot, go, here we go. This is it. Go get him, buddy.
It was great. What did it feel like in the theater? Did it almost feel sporting event-like?
It did, yeah. They did the whole thing where they bring in, you know, Max Kellerman did some of the play-by-play for a fight. They had Jim Lampley doing some HBO Now stuff. You know, so they blended in the current fight scene into the actual movie, and they did it without being really, you know, kind of sticky or cliche or anything. It was actually pretty well done.
Was there a lot of people in the theater when you went?
I got there pretty late, so I couldn't really make it good. You know, the lights were down, and we were 3 previews in when I got in my seat, so I couldn't really tell.
Solo Connor movie?
No, one with a friend of mine. With a buddy.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, no, it was one with a buddy. That's how you go see Rocky. Is Rocky a date movie?
Can be.
I guess it could be.
I mean, I don't see why not. Women love sports, and you could be the tough guy that's taking her to see the boxing and protect her from the evildoers of the world.
This from the 708. Totally agree about Creed. A lot of great things about it, but what stuck out was the soundtrack. I'll agree with that. Used music better than any movie I've seen this year. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. And this from the 708 again, different guy, but or girl, who knows. Rocky V was the street fight against Tommy Gunn.
Oh, right.
I haven't seen Rocky V, but that sentence alone tells me I probably don't need to. Street fight against Tommy Gunn. I'm good.
Jake Arrieta's outside our studio, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
It's cool. Not really Jake Arrieta, but he
has the beard, huh?
He looks good. I would say this, Connor.
Mm-hmm.
You have somehow, some way piqued my interest here with your...
You got to go see it. You have to.
Maybe Mike Jacobson will go with me. tonight.
I'll go watch it again.
You would go.
That's how strongly I feel about this movie. I'd go see it again.
Or maybe Mike Jacobson won't. I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
The Jackal is just very hard to pin down. I knew
he is. He's tough. Especially on a Saturday night.
Listen, I'm all in. I'm gonna see. I tried to see it. I was gonna go last night, but I was so tired, Connor.
Well, you have my recommendation. Go check it out. Go see Creed. There's another movie that's gonna invade, or if it hasn't already, it's gonna invade every little piece of your life, and then it's gonna invade some of your sports as well. We'll talk about that. Got to take a quick break. We got the 6:30 news, fantasy football with Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com. We get to do that coming up. We'll get your lineup set for the first playoff weekend, and we've also got a feature with Judd Surratt, the Know Your Enemy for your Chicago Blackhawks as well. You got 720 WGN. Welcome back to the beat here on 720 WGN. You know what time it is. It's playoff time in most everyone's fantasy league. If you made it, congratulations. If you didn't, you weren't listening to our guy, Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com. It's the awesome app. It gets you all the information that you need. It gets you the latest up-to-date news to help you set your lineups. And you're going to need that when you come into the playoffs. You can check out SportsManias.com. If you're just getting in now, you're late. But you can do it anyway. Just help yourself out in Week 14. Vicente, what's up, my man? Good to have you again.
Doing well. And, yeah, you know, it's never too late. If you've made it this far, you've got a chance, and you've got to capitalize.
Better late than never is what I always say. I wonder if we could look back at, like, the fantasy season that was. Is there somebody that's most surprising to you over the course of the year? I mean, for me, I don't know if it necessarily goes fantasy-wise, but the fact that you've got Doug Martin right there at the top of running back ranks and yardage and all that stuff at the end of the year, that's pretty amazing to me. I don't know if it amazes you as much.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I mean, he's somebody that has always had that potential to be a top fantasy running back, but hadn't really lived up to the hype ever. And at this point, the hype was, dwindling off, and people really believe in him to be a top fantasy running back. So he's been impressive this year. He's had some monster games and has definitely been somebody that has rewarded his owners.
Vicente, you've been impressive as well. Every single week, bringing the information. I might get emotional at some point during today's interview, but I'm going to do my best to hold it together. You know who's also been impressive is Andy Dalton. I didn't think that Dalton was going to be this type of quarterback, and they got the Steelers this week, and you go back to their first meeting this year. Dalton did not have a particularly strong performance, one interception, a couple of touchdowns, one of his worst games of the year. Are you a Dalton believer this week?
I am. And first of all, I'm going to miss you guys very much as well. These have been some of my favorite interviews. But second of all, I agree. You know, the Red Rifle has definitely had his best fantasy season to date. He's somebody who was also inconsistent in the past. But with the weapons around him, I mean, you've seen, you know, the rise of Tyler Eifert, who's had some injuries late in the season, but has really blossomed into one of the top fantasy tight ends in the league. Obviously, A.J. Green, and then, you know, a backfield between Jeremy Hill and Bernard, who have both done an excellent job in terms of, like, complimenting Dalton. I think he's somebody that has proven himself up to this point. You have him in your leagues, you got to ride with him. He's taking you to the playoffs. So I definitely say stick with Dalton this week.
Talking with our guy Vicente Fernandez of SportsManias.com here on 720 WGN. I know that, you know, daily fantasy is all the rage, and we're going to be watching, you know, what happens in New York with FanDuel and DraftKings and all that stuff pretty closely here, because that's going to change, I think, the landscape of fantasy. But I know a lot of people play dynasty stuff too. You know, the long term, you've been in this league with your friends for 10 years and you hate them so much, but you have to show up every year to this draft just so that you can beat the friends that you have. If you were drafting in, like, a dynasty league, or let's say that you've got, you know, your feelers out there in a trade for a guy like Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston, two rookies this year who have had some really solid performances and some, you know, look a little bit uglier, which one of those quarterbacks is better, you know, fantasy-wise for you going forward in a dynasty-type setting?
You know, that's a tough question. I think they've both had excellent rookie years fantasy-wise, And even not, right? They've both had very solid seasons for being rookie quarterbacks, which is really difficult to do in the NFL. Mariota obviously started off the hotter of the two. I actually think Jameis Winston is primed for a big week this week. And if you're sort of struggling, you know, if your number one has a bad matchup this week, he's somebody that I would look at along with Tyrod Taylor.
I think you can't go wrong with either of those two. I think if you're looking to make a trade for, you know, the future of the position on your team, I would say whichever one you're able to buy lower, that's who I'd go for, because I think you can't go wrong. And obviously, as we've seen, you know, with guys like Andy Dalton, the quarterback position can change fairly quickly. But I'm confident that both of those guys are going to be good QBs in this league, fantasy-wise, for a while.
Feeling all our fantasy football emotions with Vicente Fernandez right now. Sports Mania is on 720 WGN. No Tony Romo. What does that mean for you in projecting Dez Bryant's performance?
I think Dez Bryant is a bit of a bust candidate this week. I mean, you pretty much have to start him, right? Like, just based off of his ceiling alone, like, he's somebody that obviously when he's getting the ball is among the best in the league. But he's somebody that's going to be high risk, high reward this weekend. And for those owners that have him, you know, who sort of felt that way about him probably throughout the season because of obviously the injuries as well, you're probably going to ride with him. And you know, he's either going to give you a big week or he's going to be a bust. But he's definitely a bust candidate.
Marquise Wilson is going to be on the IR. So that's down. You know, he's down Martellus Bennett. He's down Marquise Wilson. Alshon Jeffrey's going to go. Matt Forte's there, too. Washington has been kind of all season long, you know, that kind of thing. Where's Jay Cutler on the quarterback tiers this week?
I think he's, you know, a low-end QB1, high-end QB2. I don't have him towards the top of my rankings personally, though, you know, obviously with he's got his number one player, right, which is Alshon. So, like, it's not like he's devoid of weapons, but obviously the Bears have – are not, you know, full throttle this weekend. I think he's somebody that if you have to start him, he's definitely serviceable, but he's not the ideal start this week if you've got a higher-end QB1.
What do you think of Alex Smith right now? A little more consistent, been over 20 points a couple of weeks in a row, and the Chiefs playing the Chargers. So, I don't know, if Alex Smith's available in your league and you're dealing with a Tony Romo situation, maybe that's a fair play.
Yeah, I think Alex Smith would not be a bad pickup this week. And like I mentioned, you know, there's a few guys on the waiver this week, or that were on the waiver, that are free agents, at least in the league that I'm playing and that I've seen available. Guys like, you know, Tyrod Taylor, who's coming off two of the biggest QB fantasy weeks in the season, and he's got a really nice matchup, as well as, you know, Blake Bortles, a guy that we've talked about in the past as well, who's coming off 200-300-yard performances. And also has a nice matchup. So I would look at those two guys. I think Smith makes the list, but he'd be below those two guys for me if they're available as free agents in your league.
Let me ask you this. Wide receiver-wise, Vicente, DeAndre Hopkins is, you know, sitting on top of the list and doing what he's doing, even with Brian Hoyer as his quarterback. Odell Beckham Jr. is kind of an up-and-down boom-or-bust guy. Julio Jones doesn't catch touchdowns anymore for God knows what reason. Where is DeAndre Hopkins the top NFL wide receiver fantasy-wise throughout this season, even regardless of how he started this year?
Yeah, I think he is. DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, to me, wound up being a top 10 guy overall, which he obviously, you know, he was starting to become that guy as Andre Johnson was on his way out last year. We saw the potential that he had, and I think he's really, really capitalized on it this season, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, there were some quarterback inconsistencies there earlier in the season, and it's not like he's got a top-tier guy like, you know, an Aaron Rodgers or a healthy Tony Romo, but he's just a freak of nature in terms of his ability to go up and get the ball, and I think he is the number one wideout in fantasy this season.
All right, Vicente, you know how we end it every single week. Is there, you know, whether you're playing daily and you need a bargain buy, or whether you're, you know, scrounging the waiver wire in the playoffs, maybe you're the last seed and you figure that number one guy who's playing against you has already got his lineup set. Is there a bargain here this week that helps win you a matchup, you know, whether it's wide receiver, tight, you know, however, wherever we go? We could even pick a defense. I don't think we ever have, but I always allow it. Is there a bargain buy here in week 14 that helps you win your first-round matchup?
I would look out for, a Miami guy, as I am, Devontae Parker down here. He's had two solid weeks. He's got a matchup against the Giants, who've been prone to giving up some good numbers to receivers last. You know, they obviously gave up a good week against the Jets to both Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. He's been getting targeted more than Jarvis Landry, and he's somebody who started off the season relatively slow. So I think he's somebody that's probably available, and I would look it up for Parker if you're looking for a receiver to try to help you win this matchup and advance to the playoffs.
Vicente, great job as per always. And if you had to say right now in your Vicente moment, real fast, who's going to win the Super Bowl? Are you going with the undefeated Panther, or are you floating over to the AFC? Because I really don't think anybody else in the NFC matters. Well, I suppose maybe. Your call, Vicente. Where are you going?
You know what? For me, I it's always, it's not like that. This isn't my favorite team, but it's always difficult for me to bet against the New England Patriots.
Sure.
Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, down the stretch, they know how to do it. They know how to win. The odds to me are always in their favor, especially, you know, with Gronk most likely back and healthy for the playoffs. They're the team, in my opinion, to beat because of the experience that they have. But I think the Panthers, for what it's worth, you know, have been outstanding this season and should, you know, should take the NFC.
Vicente, appreciate it as always. Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we can do it again next season.
I shouldn't have dogged the Arizona Cardinals there.
Did you? Did you dog the Cardinals?
Well, I kind of just disqualified them. That was wrong. Vicente, you're the best.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Vicente Fernandez, sportsmanias.com. Download the app. It can still help you in week 14. And if you, God willing, advance to the playoffs, you're going to need it. We'll be back with more right here, 720 WGN.
Kane, top of the left circle, to the right circle. Jeremiah into Kane, left circle. Shoot, he scores! Make it 25 straight games with a point. Patrick Kane scores a power play goal.
You know, it's something I'm trying not to think about too much, just go out and play the game. And, you know, the last few games, I don't think I've played as well as I probably could have, but you know, sometimes you end up with those chances, and you can take advantage of getting points. So, you know, now I'm kind of looking just to improve on my game.
That is, well, you probably know who that is. That's Patrick Kane, he of the 25 game point streak. Kaner! You're listening to The Beat here, 720 WGN. The Hawks took down the Jets 2-0 last night. Patrick Kane extended the streak. He won one goal, no assists, and helped him get the 2-0 win. They get the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow, 5:30 pre, 6 o'clock puck drop, so he gets a chance to extend it to 26. We've talked about this Hawks team being kind of a one-line offensive team for quite some time now. And now that that one line that's creating offense has that guy with the 25 straight games with points, other teams hate that. They can't stand it. They're really, I mean, you saw how visibly upset Nashville was when they gave up that point, the goal to Kane.
Yeah, but now there's three stories in sports that I care about.
Interesting.
Yes, Patrick Kane.
Uh-huh.
His streak.
Sure.
The Golden State Warriors.
That's your number one.
Which is my, well.
Yeah, and that's fine.
I'm an NBA
that's fine.
Guy.
Double OT with no Klay Thompson last night. No kidding.
And they're in Milwaukee tonight on a back-to-back. Could become the first team in NBA history to go 7-0 on a road trip.
Unbelievable.
Never happened before. Back-to-back, missing not only Klay Thompson, but also Harrison Barnes. And no one's given any love to the Carolina Panthers, who are undefeated.
You're right. No one is giving them any love.
So I'm fascinated by, I was hoping we were going to have an undefeated Super Bowl with Carolina and the Patriots. That didn't happen.
Well, that would have been fun.
New England's now lost two. But I'm hoping that, listen, why don't we just go big with Patrick Kane? Why not?
35? 40?
Just keep it rolling. Whatever 40. It is. It makes the regular season that much more interesting. I know the Blackhawks are in a playoff position tussle and the whole deal that could end up with them out of the playoffs. I don't think that's
going to be tough in the West,
but they're in a battle, so the games do matter. But a nice little side story, Kane, or it's just a huge story right now. Every night, did Kane get a point?
It's the Vancouver Canucks. They stand in the way of 26, and Judd Surratt, who is our Blackhawks pre and post game host, has Know Your Enemy for the Vancouver Canucks.
Keep your friends close, put your enemies close.
He is my enemy.
This is Know Your Enemy on 720 WGN.
Enemy.
Here's Judd Surratt.
Anybody miss this?
Al O'Brien, who's one of their top guys now. Eager's going to drop the glove. Eager and Bieksa. And a couple of others have paired off. Seabrook, oh, and Eager, a big left-hand drop. Bieksa. Bieksa looking to answer as the officials are occupied elsewhere. And this one's going to keep going. Eager and Bieksa. And now one of the referees comes over. That's Mike Hassenfratz. Here's Duncan Keith along with Burroughs. And they have just about all paired up. Burroughs seemed to have a head full of hair.
I think Adam Burroughs has got to get away from the linesman and get over where Duncan Keith and Burroughs is.
Look at that. You keep pulling his hair. Burroughs.
For about 4 years, the Blackhawks and the Vancouver Canucks had the most ferocious rivalry in the league. But those days have since passed. The Canucks are a team in transition under second-year general manager Jim Benning. Most but not all of the villains and characters have moved on. Six of the combatants remain, including these two.
Hawks changing while controlling the puck. Panarin's come onto the ice. Canucks can't get it out. Now they do. Hansen carries it to center. Right wing feed. Daniel Sedin drops for Henrik. Henrik in front. Daniel scores! For Daniel Sedin, 5 points for Henrik, and the Canucks lead 5-3, and there's not a single hat on the ice.
You don't need witchcraft to beat the Hawks. You just need Sedinery.
At 35 years old and in their 15th NHL season, the Sedin twins, Daniel and Henrik, are still elite offensive players in the league and a unique challenge to defend because of their chemistry together. Beyond those two, the Canucks lack goal-scoring depth. They're counting on former Blackhawk and two-time 30-goal scorer Radim Vrbata to fill the back of the net, which he really hasn't done much of early in the season. The Canucks also missed the size and production down the middle from Brandon Sutter, who they picked up in a trade with Pittsburgh last summer. But Sutter's out 4 to 6 weeks after sports hernia surgery in early December. That's a lot of growing group of prospects, something Vancouver hasn't had in years, to play extended minutes. That includes center Bo Horvat, the ninth overall pick in 2013, and 19-year-old Jared McCann, along with feisty winger Jake Virtanen. Ben Hutton is doing the same on the back end.
Honestly, I had no idea I would be here at this point. I'm going to be completely honest. I had no idea, but I mean, I am, and I'm happy, so just going to keep rolling with it. You know, every day I've been driving to the rink with Vert and McCann, and, you know, we just chat, and, you know, it makes it that much easier, just the group of young guys. But also, the older guys have been great as well, so, yeah, it's been fun so far.
The Canucks core of defensemen should be a strength. Chris Tanev and Lucas Spezza are steady puck movers. Alexander Edler has an offensive flair to his game, and Dan Hamhuis played on the Canadian Olympic team in 2014. Hamhuis, however, suffered a grisly injury in early December, taking a puck in the face, and he is out indefinitely. In net, veteran Ryan Miller has been average this year. Last year, the Canucks surprised NHL observers, making the playoffs under rookie head coach Willie Desjardins. Even though Vancouver could make it back to the postseason this year in a weak Pacific Division, expectations are low again this year. Jim Benning's team is right up against the cap, and if they fall out of contention, the Canucks have some interesting pieces like pending free agents Vrbata and Hamhuis, which could expedite the Canucks roster rehab and make the franchise once again into a fierce Western Conference rival. For Know Your Enemy, I'm Judd Surratt.
Keep your enemies close.
So the Vancouver Canucks are next. That was Judd Surratt with Know Your Enemy, by the way. Vancouver Canucks are next. It's a 5:30 pregame is the next time you can hear the lovely voice of Judd Surratt setting you up, and hopefully Patrick Kane sets somebody up for a goal, or maybe he can score one himself and extend the streak to 26 tomorrow.
Big day of sports tomorrow on WGN. Of course, we'll have the Bears post with Hample B and Kaz right into Blackhawks hockey, and if you're a Northwestern fan, slide on over to 1000, and you'll hear some Cat basketball at 6 as well.
Chicago State, if I'm not mistaken.
The Cougars at Welsh Ryan Arena. And the Cats trying to get to 8-1. They've got DePaul, too, a week from Saturday, so we're out a little bit later.
That's right.
The Blue Demons, that one at the Horizon next Saturday afternoon. Come on out, see some Wildcat Blue Demon hoop.
They're going to be ranked in a week or two, right?
Northwestern?
I mean, yeah. We got to wait a little farther. You got to win a Big Ten game before you get there.
I think, for them to get ranked, they'd have to beat Maryland at home.
Well, that's, I mean, Maryland's a tough ball club is all I'm saying.
Right. That game is January the 2nd.
You get Nebraska first on the 30th.
That's right.
Okay.
So they win at Nebraska and they beat Maryland. Then I think you're
rankage.
Yes.
Now we're talking rankage.
They are in the they're getting votes though, so that's impressive.
Well, I mean, we went through the schedule that they've played already. I mean, that's it's a toughish non-conference schedule. There's no doubt about it.
Right. They've been impressive, no doubt.
The Midwestern University Eye Institute in Downers Grove is now accepting patients. As a full-service clinic, the Eye Institute provides comprehensive eye exams, glasses and contact lenses, eye disease screening and treatment, vision therapy, low vision rehabilitation services, and CARM emergency eye care.
Yes.
All at an affordable price. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500, the Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. We got a quick break. We'll say hello to Hannah Stanley and goodbye to you. We'll get the news as well. 720 WGN.